Hi, folks. Today's episode brought to you by one of my favorite sponsors, SunsetLakeSabade.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST, you get 20% off. That means 20% off their tinctures, 20% off their gummies, gummies that help you sleep, gummies that help you party with a little bit of THC, tinctures that help you sleep, tinctures that help you relax, tinctures that help your pets relax. They also have smokables. They have keef and flowers and pre-rolls. They have Sabade coffee, a great farm roast coffee. They have Sabade fudge. They have salves and balms. The other day,
I forgot.
The only thing that's keeping Brian's relationship together, the... the lifted tea that they have, which is actually, it's a lot for someone like me. But nevertheless, it's also delicious. The salves they have, Saul the other day had like a sprained ankle. I got a little Sabade and lidocaine on there. That helped. All sorts of products, all third-party tested, all grown without pesticides. They use integrated pest management. They use regenerative farming practices, great business practices, $20 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned, and most important to me, they are movement partners. These guys have donated tens of thousands of dollars to things like strike relief funds and Planned Parenthood, carceral reform, refugee resettlement. Just a great all-around company up in Vermont. They've done mutual aid. And they came up with the coupon code left is best, and it gets you 20% off. Go check them out right now. They also makes great gifts. Now's the time. Get all your gifts in October. You don't have to fret and come December. All right, now time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday. Tuesday, Casual Tuesday. Wednesday, Casual Hump Day. Thursday, Casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 10th, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, executive editor of the American Progress, David Dayan. Wait, what did I just say? American Prospect. Sorry. And host of Organized Money Podcast and the Prospect Weekly Roundup. We're going to be simulcasting with them today. Then, later, in studio, comedian, host of The Bituation Room, Francesca Fiorentini. Be live in studio. Also on the program today, Israel claims ceasefire has taken effect. Some indication that's the case. U.S. supposedly sending 200 troops to monitor. Meanwhile, in New York, Letitia James indicted in the latest corrupt Trump DOJ saga. It is day 10 of the shutdown, as airports become DHS propaganda sites and also half closed. Speaking of the DHS, a key Trump DHS official, the nominee to head the special counsel office in the DOJ, implicated in sexual harassment of a lower-ranking colleague. Federal judge temporarily blocks troop deployment in Chicago. Two Trump judges on a three-judge panel seem open to sending federal troops into Portland. Trump regime cancels the largest solar project in Nevada. U.S. bails out Argentina with $20 billion because America first. No, I'm sorry. Saving the fortunes of Scott Bessant's hedge fund buddies first. Trump regime to deploy counter-terror apparatus against groups like Act Blue and Indivisible. Republicans in Senate block a bipartisan war powers resolution to stop Trump from blowing up civilians in boats in the Caribbean Sea. And despite Graham Planter's momentum, Chuck Schumer has pushed 77-year-old Janet Mills into the race. I'm sorry, has wheeled 77-year-old Janet Mills into the Senate race in Maine. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Emma Bigland out today. She will miss all the fun. We've got a lot to get to. We will continue to monitor what's going on with the ceasefire. Just a little bit of house cleaning. It looks like now we will be off, as is the custom on Indigenous Peoples Day. We're going to run an interview. One of the most, it's a little bit Sam Cedar coded in terms of like why it's one of the most interesting interviews for me, was a lawyer who has worked on a lot of Indigenous cases. And essentially, he outlines the history of a papal edict that is embedded in U.S. law, which essentially allows the United States as a government to run roughshod over Indigenous people in this country. And it is embedded in that and was cited as recently as I think it was a 2005 case with Ginsburg, maybe 2009. It's fascinating how these things develop. On Monday night, can I announce this? Oh, yeah, but we're going to be streaming it. Well, that's the point. Yeah. On Monday night, it appears that we're going to be streaming from the Mamdani rally, right? Is it what is it exactly on Monday night? But We'll include that in the intro that we do on a Monday day. Everybody's a mess around here.
What kind of bull is this?
The Our Time Has Come rally.
Yes, it's the Our Time Has Come rally, and we're going to be in charge of the stream. So
everybody's a mess around here.
Yeah.
We're going to be in charge of the stream.
We're going to be on the tech side of things. Don't worry about a thing. It'll work out fine. So we'll be off during the day and on during the night. But we will have a good show for you on Monday. And then in the evening, we'll be carrying that rally. So check that out. In the meantime, I mean, with the one caveat that we'll see what happens when they start to roll out this counter-terror apparatus. A lot of this stuff is a joke until it's not. I think that really does explain what's gone on in this country for 10 years now. I mean, maybe longer, but really like sort of ridiculously a joke, and then it becomes real. And so, you know, 2015, was it? 2013, Jade Helm.
2015.
We thought, oh, my God, These people are crazy. What, in what instance would the president at that time, Barack Obama, invade Texas? And as so often is the case with these right wingers, and you can see it both in like the conspiracy theories, their projection is in fact their aspiration or their reality. It is very, very easy to find, for instance, homophobes who have been elected officials or even, frankly, right-wing commentators who are, in fact, secretly gay and they're whatever it is. The self-loathing projects outward. Very often, these accusations from folks like, you know, Greg Abbott, like Obama's going to invade Texas. And if so, you know, or Kristi Noem was like, if Biden dares to not, you know, federalize National Guard, that would be an outrage. Of course, they go ahead and do it. So this video is both sort of hilarious, insane, and a real possibility of actually happening. This video was shot following the anti-Antifa, as they call it, roundtable conference with a bunch of right-wing podcasters explaining to Donald Trump how their lack of Trump derange syndrome has made them more attractive and how weirdly we have traced Antifa origins all the way back to Weimar Germany. Incidentally, that was delivered by a guy who was, you know, sort of like, if not, obviously not an actual Nazi, but an aspirant and someone who holds beliefs that could be described as Nazi-ish. Was actually saying that, you know, the problem with Antifa started back when the rise of fascism happened.
Jack Posobiec, a guy who loves to throw 1488 as sort of references to troll people, and you can look up what 1488 means.
But here is the video they shot after that session.
Antifa beats journalist. Antifa attacks our police stations. They attack our courthouses. They dox our law enforcement officers. No more. They are a terrorist group, and we are coming after them.
We are here at the White House today to unmask Antifa, to follow the money all the way to the top. If you want to get to the bottom of who is fomenting this chaos and violence in our country, you must follow the money.
I was a mainstream reporter in Seattle for 10 years before I quit mainstream media, in part due to its refusal to acknowledge the dangers of Antifa and radical left-wing violence.
Part of the problem that we have is that a lot of people refuse to believe that Antifa is real. It is just a made-up thing, but I have seen them. They are real, they are dangerous, and they are violent.
They are an organized, systemic, international criminal enterprise. And what the FBI is going to do is trace the money, follow the funds, and find every single person that was involved in funding the riots and the violent acts of criminality that they are perpetrating on our street.
I've watched Antifa brutally beat, harass, and threaten Americans in the street, but all of that ends with the Trump administration.
I was brutally attacked and almost killed by Antifa in the streets of Seattle. All of my colleagues have been attacked. I can't think of a single one who hasn't. Violence against journalists and police officers in our streets can't stand.
Just days ago, I was in the Portland jailhouse, and now I'm in the White House. This administration is built different, and Antifa's days are numbered.
And I want to thank President Donald Trump for designating Antifa a terrorist organization, and I'm looking forward to the FBI and the DOJ hunting down these people like the terrorists that they are.
All I gotta say, it's a bad day to be Antifa.
And Antifa's days of using violence and intimidation against their political opposition are over.
And I've continued to report on them over the years despite the threats of violence and actual violence that's happened because I owe a thank you to this country, the United States, for settling my parents who were victims of communism in Vietnam.
1 month ago, Charlie Kirk was murdered by a violent leftist. We all saw it, and we all saw thousands of leftists celebrate it.
What?
Antifa symbols were found on the bullet casings of the guns used to shoot and kill my friend.
We won't take it anymore. President Trump is not going to stand for it. And I'm so grateful that we have a leader in the White House that understands how we need to fight these sophisticated networks and how we need to take these terrorists out.
I've been attacked by Antifa, doxxed by Antifa, harassed by Antifa, but we're not standing down. We're now coming for you.
Some of the energy of these guys.
Is that filmed in the day room of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Well, that's the thing, is it is hilarious. Like, honestly, I can't. Like, when Saturday Night Live does the parody of this, if they do it, the difference is really just going to be just so subtle. You don't need much to tweak here, except for the put that picture up. Oh my God. The problem is, according to Reuters, Trump administration plans to deploy America's counterterrorism apparatus, including the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Justice Department, as well as the IRS and the Treasury Department, against certain left-wing groups it accuses of funding and organizing political violence. Okay. There are... these things don't exist. So they're going to go and find it. Reuters spoke to three White House officials, four Department of Homeland Security officials, one Justice Department official to produce the first comprehensive account of how decisions are being made, forces deployed, and operations coordinated in the crackdown. Stephen Miller, of course, is deeply involved in reviewing the agency's investigations. Trump administration has released some examples of what alleges are left-wing violence, but it provided little evidence of a coordinated effort. Left-wing organizations have fueled violent riots, organized attacks against law enforcement officers, coordinated illegal doxing campaigns, arranged drop points for weapons and riot materials, and more. Like, what? They're going to focus on domestic terrorists whose common ideologies include anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, and anti-Christianity.
Guilty.
September 25th, Trump, when pressed by Reuters, Trump mentioned George Soros, Reid Hoffman. In response to a separate request, White House highlighted seven political protests in 2023 and 2025. That included acts of violence directed against law enforcement officials and two incidences of vandalism at a Tesla dealership this year, as well as a half a dozen social media posts celebrating the damage. I think we had a host of the Tesla Stop Tesla thing. Now, they weren't involved in any type of violent acts against Tesla, but they protested.
Vast majority of those protests were peaceful.
The White House gave a list, stressed they were not necessarily potential targets. The list includes Soros's Open Society Foundations, Act Blue, which is a funding mechanism for the Democratic Party, Indivisible, which is a grassroots coalition that does protests and letter writing, et cetera. The Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights. The goal is to destabilize Soros' network, a third White House official said. Wait, what? By labeling it a terrorist organization. Other groups on the list include two Jewish nonprofits that oppose Israel's war in Gaza, Reuters words, not mine, if not now, and Jewish Voice for Peace. Jesus. Potential tools to defund or shut down these groups include IRS investigations to strip them of tax exempt status, criminal probes by the DOJ and the FBI, surveillance by federal law enforcement, agencies, the use of RICO statutes typically used for organized crime, and financial investigations under anti-terror laws. They lead with the joke videos, but it's getting real. It's getting real. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. Keep your eye on it. Understand the importance of judges. Understand the importance. You know, we had Josh Orton on yesterday from Demand Justice. Understand the importance of Democratic senators blocking Trump's nominees or voting against them, at least. Because they're going to end up deciding whether or not you go to jail because you were part of Act Blue or get shut down. You understand they're coming for the 2026 elections here. They're going to do it through gerrymandering. They're going to do it through trying to intimidate groups that get out the vote, that rally people, that help fund candidates. And if that doesn't work, who knows what they're going to do? In a moment, we're going to talk to David Dayan about the government shutdown and more. This episode brought to you by Wildgrain. This is an amazing service. It's a little bit dangerous for me because I've developed a relationship with frozen Belgian waffles that Belgian waffles.
You're eating them frozen?
Saul started, and I'm like, dude, don't you want to even cook those? And he's like, no. And then I'm like, well, I'll try a little bit just to make sure I understand what the kid is. Because the waffles are pre-cooked, and you just heat those up like... but they just the same as the apple cider donuts. Wildgrain is the first baked from frozen subscription box for artisanal breads, seasonal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. These guys are out of Boston, too, I think. Unlike store-bought, Wildgrain uses a slow fermentation process that's easier on your belly, richer in nutrients and antioxidants, and made with simple ingredients you can pronounce. Wildgrain boxes are fully customizable. They're constantly adding seasonal and limited-time products for you to enjoy. In addition to their classic box, they now feature a gluten-free box and a plant-based box. I got croissants from this. I made Saul a bunch of croissants. You got to just warm up the apple cider donuts or the Belgian waffles. You don't even need to warm those up, from my experience. But they also have baguettes. They have rolls. They have I don't know what you would call that, like a peasant bread or a sourdough loaf rather, and they have really great pastas. I had a ravioli with, I think it was like squash and some type of cheese. I think it was ricotta. Delicious. Really delicious. It's great. It sits in your freezer. You pull it out when you need it. It's like baking, but without any of the hassle. I honestly challenge you to go to wildgrain.com/majority and look at this stuff and not have your mouth water. This fall, treat yourself and your family to warm sourdough breads and seasonal baked goods from Wildgrain. Rumor has it they have apple cider donuts and pumpkin cinnamon biscuits. It's not a rumor. It's actually true. Get them before these seasonal items sell out. For a limited time, Wildgrain offering our listeners $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/majority to start your subscription. Free croissants. That's right. Every box. And $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/majority. That's wildgrain.com/majority. Or you can use the promo code majority at checkout. Don't miss their seasonal products. Also sponsoring the program today, I'm always happy when I get one of these because I have a bottle of Nutrafol here and one at home. And on days I forget at home, I remember here when I get to read the copy. I mean, I know that's not the point of it, but If you're dealing with hair issues like thinning or shedding, but feel totally stuck on what to try, I totally get that. There are many products out there, hard to know which ones actually are going to do anything. That's exactly why I gave Nutrafol a closer look. It is not just hype. It is physician formulated, clinically tested, and even recommended by dermatologists. A couple of years ago, they wanted to sponsor the program. Nobody was interested in taking it. Then at one point I started getting a little bit older and I was like, wait a second, I'm starting to find too many hairs in my towel after a shower. And then I'm like, I got to get ahead of this. You know, there's not many things I got going for me. So I needed to keep the hair and I've been taking it now for over a year and it's working. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. It is trusted by over 1.5 million people, including myself. You can feel great about what you put in your body because Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified. That's the gold party in third-party certification for supplements. And most supplements, they rely on ingredient studies. Nutrafol clinically tests their final formulations to ensure their efficacy using a variety of hair measurement tools, hair counts, pull tests. That assesses the growth, this quality, the shedding, the texture, etc. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is super simple because they'll send it to you. You see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months when Nutrafol for a limited time. Nutrafol offering you $10 off your first month subscription. Free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com. Enter the promo code TMR10. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. Spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code TMR10. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code TMR10. All that information will be in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Quick break. David Dayan. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out today, joining us now, and we're in a what is known as a simulcast.
That's right now.
David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect, he is the host of Organized Money, or co-host, I should say, of the Organized Money podcast with Matt Stoller, and the host of the Prospect's wrap up. Each week.
The weekly roundup, which we're coming to you right now live on YouTube. This is like, you remember the Laugh Olympics growing up, which was all the animals in the Hanna-Barbera series that would be together competing in events. This was my Saturday mornings were not complete without the Laugh Olympics. It was a crossover.
Well, I would have said as a crossover, something more likely, more like, I don't know, when the Jefferson showed up on the on All in the Family.
Sure. Or Mork on Happy Days.
Right.
Mork from Mork. That's where it got its start.
Well, that was actually where it launched. I mean, that wasn't really even a crossover. That was like a deliberate spinoff. But we could do this for hours, David, and no one would be listening when we were done. So let's get into this. It's day 10 of the shutdown. And give me your assessment and where you were, you know, for the weeks, months, really since March, this has been a question. Would Chuck Schumer actually try and get something? Because in March, he failed to get anything to the point where Nancy Pelosi mocked him, which was sort of astonishing, right? I mean, that was pretty amazing. And Schumer, it feels like, was both pushed by progressives and also blocked by Republicans, where he couldn't really figure out how to not have a government shutdown. And I think they're now happy about that.
I think Chuck Schumer is waiting for your apology. And maybe you can take this opportunity right now to give it to him.
We have been somewhat positive about Schumer since he actually got to this point. And but I won't apologize. And we'll be talking about...
Because believe in the Trumpian idea of never apologize, never back down.
No, that's not true. That is not true. I do apologize in certain circumstances, but not this one, because we also have an issue about the Governor Mills hopping into a race in Maine, but we'll get to that.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But I think that Democrats... The rank and file of the party clearly wanted this fight. And that's really the fault lines within the party that we've seen since the beginning of the second Trump term. It's, do you give a damn enough to fight authoritarianism? And by doing this, I think that the base is generally satisfied with that. You know, what I've always delved into here is the how and how it's being framed. Obviously, there's kind of a public conversation and a private conversation happening at the same time. The public conversation is all about healthcare. It's about healthcare subsidies. It seems like the political people are kind of driving the idea that, oh, if we talk about healthcare is a good issue for the Democrats. And this is a good way, even if we lose, to get our message about healthcare out to the American people.
Let me just stop you there.
Yeah.
Two things. One, I will say that the Republicans did not start off talking about healthcare, and they've had to talk about healthcare far more than they wanted to, which has been a good sign. The slight problem with that calculation is, and I guess maybe there's a belief in Democratic consultant circles that, like, all you need to do is just have the word healthcare associated with Democrats, rather, because there really is no plan. The Democrats don't have a plan. They're just basically saying, don't cut the subsidies that have existed.
That's right.
Which is, you know, we should.
And to a lesser extent, don't cut Medicaid, which, you know, I mean, they're just sort of raising the salience of healthcare because we're going to see this breakdown if nothing is done in the healthcare sector. So they're just kind of priming the pump. You know, then there's the other side, and the people who kind of focus on policy and are the kind of more alarmed about how the federal government itself and appropriations in particular have been going for the last 9 months, who say, well, you know, we've been signing these budget deals, we've been passing this paper over to the president, and then the president just ignores it and then cuts whatever spending he wants to cut. And how can you continue to make a deal with someone who tells you they're going to break it over and over and over again? So what you really need in here is measures that say you can't rescind this funding, you can't withhold this funding, et cetera, and restoring the power of the purse to Congress, where the Constitution says it belongs, rather than the executive. Because let's say the political people win and Republicans, you know, cry uncle, and a health care subsidy extension is made. Who's to say
next
that
week
the president right. won't just break that promise?
Yeah.
So that's, I think, you know, and as I said, the Democrats did put this some restrictions on rescinding or withholding funds into their counter proposal. Like, it's in there. But it hasn't been part of the public conversation, which makes it very easy to drop out in right. the final deal, right? So, you know, that's kind of my fear, is that where this is going to end is Republicans are going to say, okay, we'll give you a guaranteed vote on extending these subsidies. And Democrats say, see, we won. And then
well, that's
who knows
the
how
thing.
That vote goes.
Is
that,
this
who
is why I'm not
going
to apologize to your buddy Chuck Schumer, okay? Because it has been so clear. The level of desperation for him to give the Republicans what they already want, essentially. Because yeah. in 21 days, October has 31. In 21 days or so, we're going to start to move into the open enrollment period. And people are going to actually have the moment where they look at their bill and go, holy shit, this bill is
having that moment. Okay. I mean, those things get sent before the open enrollment period begins. It says, hey, open enrollment period begins. If you want to keep your coverage, this is how much it's going to cost. And that sticker shock is going to roll out literally in days. Like those things are in the mail right now.
And so the leverage, and so Republicans wanted to avoid this, the leverage is there with the Democrats because they have been, you know, announcing their predicate to extend these things. It seems to me that there should be at least some introduction of the idea. The problem is, we can't trust the president to follow through. So we need guarantees, and they can get this rescission right. language in there via the extensions. So
there are definitely Republicans who would welcome that, by the way. I mean, there are Republicans on the appropriations committees who they don't want their, you know, what they do all day, basically just, you know, contravened by the president. They're happy to silently go along with that. They're not happy necessarily to publicly go along with it. But I think if you take that out of the equation and all you're doing is relieving Republicans of the consequences of their own actions before the election, which would provide the ultimate check on that, then you're just trading something Republicans want for something Republicans need.
Yes. And let me ask you this. I want to just go back to March for a moment. Matt did an interview with the president of the AFGE local in representing the EPA in Texas. EPA employees, I should say, in Texas. And his attitude was like, this should have happened in March because we have lost so many employees to the essentially rescission. I mean, there's really no other way to, you know, describe it. This should have happened in March. And from your perspective, does what we've seen, at least at this point, vindicate those of us who were saying in March, we got to do this now because Trump is going to roll through this? And he is, I think you've called it in pieces, a rolling government shutdown.
Yeah.
And that's what we have been like observing. But you and I do this professionally. Your average person just all of a sudden right. says, like, why is my VA services coming late? Why are, right. you know, they're not going to notice that their water's not as clean as it was or that there's more dumping going on. This is all stuff that has, like, an impact 4 or 5 years down the road.
And I think what's interesting is that you're seeing the president, even though he's saying in public the Democrats are responsible for this shutdown, So he should be happy to have, you know, these consumer-facing services turn bad if the Democrats are going to be blamed. But what they're doing in private is protecting, making sure nobody knows that there's a shutdown going on. So there was going to be a lapse of the Women, Infant, and Children's program. That's a nutrition program. They found a bunch of money for that. There was going to be a lapse of the Essential Air Service program. That's the program that keeps rural and small airports alive and allows commercial aviation into those cities. They found money for that. They did not shut down parks, national parks. There are all a host of ways where there is this Trump kind of threatening to do things that would cut benefits or cut services and then not doing it, number one. And then, he's also threatened all these mass layoffs. Like from the very beginning, there's been that threat. And then that's been delayed and deferred and delayed and deferred. So there is a disinterest in letting people know there's a shutdown. The problem is it's not only up to Trump. So we have seen massive delays at airports because air traffic controllers have a lot of power in a shutdown.
Well, I want to get to the air traffic because it's always comes down to the airports, it seems, with these things. But before we get there, Trump yesterday said, I'm going to start cutting Democratic programs, the ones that the Democrats love. And what would those be? Like, no more studying the spotted owl. Any programs that Democrats have promoted and have instituted, their benefits accrue to red state voters as much, if not probably significantly more, than blue state voters.
Yeah, of course. And I think the larger point is that he's been doing that for 9 months, and it's terribly unpopular. And a lot of the firings that have taken place, he's had to rehire people.
Yeah.
You know, Doge 1.0 was really unpopular. So instituting Doge 2.0, as they tried to do at the first couple days of this thing, was just as unpopular, and it made people blame Republicans and Trump for the shutdown. So they've stopped doing that. So these threats are very empty. They're very idle. And that is why Democrats are generally doing a decent job on the politics. I just don't know what the policy end game is going to be.
Right. And that's going to trip up the politics at one point. All right. Let's turn to the airports, because this seems to be the nexus. I want to play a clip that is now running at TSA stations, essentially. When you go into security, and the lines are longer these days, particularly right now. This is what you see.
Hi, I'm Christine Ohm, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. It is TSA's top priority to make sure that you have the most pleasant and efficient airport experience as possible while we keep you safe. However, Democrats in Congress refuse to fund the federal government. And because of this, many of our operations are impacted, and most of our TSA employees are working without pay. We will continue to do all that we can to avoid delays that will impact your travel. And our hope is that Democrats will soon recognize the importance of opening the government.
Now, do you remember back in the day during the Bush administration when we would talk about, like, hey, this is a violation of the Hatch Act? And everybody go, come on. And it sort of feels like maybe people should have taken it seriously back then.
Yeah. And that's not the only thing, right? They have forced workers to put in their out of office messages, I'm out of the office because of the Democratic shutdown. They have put on websites like the website for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the radical Democrats have shut down the government, et cetera. All of these things are violations of the Hatch Act. The problem is you wouldn't know the difference between a punishment for a violation of the Hatch Act and nothing. I mean, the problem is there is no enforcement, really, for that violation.
Right. So the airports are really key, because the last government shutdown that we had during the Trump administration, I think it was in 2019.
Yeah.
It went for, like, I can't remember exactly, 3 or 4 weeks.
35 days.
35 days. And when it really started to when it turned was when the flight attendants union started to say, hey, there's a problem. It's not safe anymore on these flights because of what's happening with the air traffic controllers. People aren't getting paid. And there was one or two airports that basically were shut down. And yeah, everything changed overnight because it was like rich people started going, hey, wait a second. I got a business trip and I can't fly yeah. right now. I mean, that's basically where people feel the immediate pinch.
That's right. And whereas it took 4 or 5 weeks to do that in 2019, what I think is interesting is that literally in the first week, we're now seeing these impacts. And it's not from a large number of people calling in sick. It's not like hundreds of people. It's in the teens or less. And that's all it takes. And
which is also an indication of how sort of threadbare our staffing is at the FAA.
That's what I was going to say. Like that's what it really dictates and shows is that we have been thinning out these systems that are really important, these government agencies that really protect us. And this is a moment where just a handful of people can tip us into, you know, Burbank Airport out here in California had no air traffic controllers for 5 hours at one point this week. You don't see the problem with that?
I wouldn't worry about that. I mean,
AI.
Hello, look out AI the window. Avoid.
AI and crypto fixes this. That's right.
One of the things that I know folks do is that this helps with deer is you put like a little whistle thing on your grill of your car and it there lets the deer know you're coming. Put a couple of those on the planes. Bingo, bango. We don't need the
Why aren't you in charge of the FAA?
I got this. Mm-hmm. I'll be in charge of the Washington, Reagan and International. Don't worry, guys. I got this. I mean, but this is happening across the country now. And how does this play out at this point? I mean, it really is a question of what I've been reading, and it's sometimes hard because everybody's putting out like their own, you know, messages of like the Democrats are on the verge of caving. The Republicans are starting to splinter. Marjorie Taylor Greene, incidentally, we should say, is blaming Thune and Johnson. Yesterday, we had that clip of Johnson on C-SPAN with a military wife calling in saying, I got two sick kids. We need to get paid for military pay. And he said, it's Chuck Schumer's fault. The day before, he was at a press conference with Thune, said somebody asked, and he said, this is a good idea. We've done it in the past. And then Thune comes up and goes, no, we don't need to do that. I mean, they are not on the same page with this stuff. Right. They are like getting antsy. And I've been reading like none of the Democratic representatives are coming home and hearing anything from their constituents. I mean, that's the advantage of half the country being...
Yeah, there's a separate part where the House of Representatives has been out of commission for a few weeks, and there's seemingly no indication that Johnson is going to bring those House Republicans back into session. And this has become kind of a lingering thing. One reason is because Adelita Grijalva, who is the representative-elect from Arizona, has not been seated yet. And she would be the 218th vote on a discharge petition that would be legislation to release the Epstein files. So, this is getting caught up into a bunch of other problems that have been simmering that Republicans are having right now. And the lack of coordination, the splintering, if you will, it's made it a bad situation politically, I think, for House Republicans in particular.
So do you have a sense of what we're going to see next? I mean, do you have any?
I mean, it's just hard to see an end game, but there are moments that you can see that are forcing mechanisms. So the payment of troops, they're going to miss a payment a paycheck on October 15th. That's next Wednesday.
November 1st. That's going to be the first payment that they miss.
That'll be the first one. The federal workers, by the way, non-military federal workers miss a payment today on October 10th. So,
can we just take a moment to sympathize? Can you imagine you sign up to rip women away from their children, right, to harass and terrorize brown people, to go and, throw smoke bombs in front of schools? And you're doing this work, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, wait a second. You're not even paying me for this?
I mean, I think a lot of them do it for the love of the game.
That's probably true. But the next wave of people, it seems like, that they're going to bring in are, there's going to be...
That is not something we have heard. Like, our brave ICE soldiers are working without pay. You haven't heard that as a talking point.
Do you have any idea what it's like to have to rip a child away from a mother and leave the kid in a car and then drive off with a mother and realize, like,
They're thinking about their next paycheck. They're not even thinking about how they're going to rip that kid away.
That's why they eat like they're in hibernation mode.
Right. They're stirring up for this shutdown period. Ugh. Yeah. There was like a bunch of rejects from a De Bear sketch. Those guys, National Guard troops in Illinois.
What did someone call them? They were like... Meal Team Six.
Meal Team Six. That's that. Yeah, Meal Team Six.
Like Meal Six Team.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a forcing mechanism, and the open enrollment period is another forcing mechanism. When it will be undeniable that these rates are going crazy and haywire.
It seems to me, negotiating deal-making malpractice for the Democrats to do anything over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Like, just
regardless. Want them to get to that point on November 1st when people log in to sign up for healthcare and see those numbers. I think that has to happen.
Like, I think that, like, they have already successfully, to their credit, associated their protecting healthcare from Republicans. They will get the political value of people realizing that Republicans do not care about this.
Right.
And they can come in and demand these rescission things as, from a public-facing perspective, as part of ensuring that these subsidies are actually paid into the ACA, but in a broader sense across all of the things in the budget. And at the very least, stop the hemorrhaging of our government by fiat. And I think that seems to me to be a really important thing that happens.
I'm going to tell you another potential forcing event. Next Saturday, there are going to be this second wave of No Kings protests.
I think we've got some folks on next week about it. Yeah.
The country. And what I'm hearing is the expectation is that this is going to be bigger than the first one. And the first one had something like 3 or 4 million people across the country.
I went to
one out
in Long Island. I think it was during Emma's wedding. And I was shocked. I was shocked by the number of people.
So the expectation is this is going to be even bigger. And so now it's happening in the midst of this shutdown, and it has the potential to move people in a certain direction. But of course, these are going to be seen as in the current context of sending National Guard troops here and there. These are going to be seen as terrorist rallies or something like that. So
here's
so
Mike
that's
Johnson.
Another dynamic.
Let's play this clip because Mike Johnson seems to be aware of this as well. And they're out here trying to sort of like recharacterize this, but I don't think it's going to work.
Season because of this nonsense, and we're so angry about it. I mean, I'm a very patient guy, but I have had it with these people. They're playing games with real people's lives. The theory we have right now, they have a Hate America rally that's scheduled for October 18th on the National Mall. It's all the pro-Hamas wing and the Antifa people. They're all coming out. Some of the House Democrats are selling T-shirts for the event. And it's being told to us that they won't be able to reopen the government until after that rally because they can't face their rabid base. I mean, this is serious business hurting real people. And I'm beyond words. I can't believe they're actually doing this.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, you're talking.
So there's Mike Johnson grinding his teeth over the idea of this No Kings rally.
Of all those people coming out.
Yeah, those people coming out, presumably coming out for the first time. And are there really Democratic lawmakers who are selling I Hate America shirts?
I thought the only politician that was expert at merchandise sales was in the White House.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. But like, what is
he would sell Hate America shirts if he thought he could make a buck off it?
Yeah, exactly. They're great. They switch from. It's like one of those. What are those? The ones where you shift the view and the
right.
words change
depending on who's in the White House.
But what's Well, who is he complaining to? Is he like trying to set the table? Like, what's that about? I mean, he's saying that they can't come out until the Democrats can't come to the table until after the Hate America rally.
Apparently, they're coming for you right now. I hear police sirens in the background.
That's all right. We're so buried underground, people don't know where we are. But honestly, like, what is he trying to do there? Who is he trying to communicate what to? I just can't follow exactly what his argument is.
Well, there's kind of a larger situation going on where they're trying to depict and associate mainstream normie sign-holding Democrats who are worried about, you know, the autocracy happening in the country with Antifa, with terrorists, with, you know, the pro-Hamas wing or whatever. And use that as a pretext to round up mainly the funding sources of these kinds of things. So you've seen that document that Ken Klippenstein has put out, that directive, that national security directive.
Reuters had a piece today about who's on that list, and we played a clip of the produced piece after the Antifa or Antifa, as they call it, roundtable that they had at the White House yesterday. And they are trying to criminalize places like Indivisible or Act Blue or normie Democratic stuff, like total normie stuff.
Yep. And so, you know, the fact and this No Kings rally was planned months ago, this October 18th set of dates. And they're trying to play that into their just sort of broader agenda to criminalize left politics and criminalize speaking out against Republican politics.
Where have you heard any response from lawmakers about this?
I mean, there have been some. It's growing a little bit stronger. There was almost seemed like a coordinated news blackout about this national security directive for a while. But Ro Khanna has talked about it. Even Alyssa Slotkin on the floor of the Senate mentioned this the other day during a Senate speech. So I do think there's more of an awareness now. But it's incredibly dangerous. It's something we wrote about actually a year ago, that the fact that Democratic politics is so propped up by 501c3 nonprofit organizations that are funded largely by philanthropies, that an enemy a Republican government got in control of the IRS, they had a lot of ways that they could use to make life difficult, if not impossible, for these nonprofits and the philanthropic organizations who fund them. And they are
What's
following
the alternative? What's the
alternative is mass membership organizations like we saw, you know, throughout the 1960s and beyond. The anti-war movement didn't have philanthropies that were funding them through nonprofits and the tax code. The civil rights movement didn't get their funding that way. And unions historically don't get their funding that way. Right. It's about mass membership organizations. That's the alternative. And you know, what harms democratic and progressive success just as much because they're funded by essentially rich people, rich philanthropies, is that it makes it harder to do certain things that rich people don't want you to do.
Like, I don't know, run an oyster farmer in Maine for the Senate without.
Right. I mean, I'm talking about policy, wealth taxes and.
Yes.
You know,
but I mean, this is all part of a whole. Right. I mean, if the entire mechanism.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, if the entire mechanism is reliant on a big. I mean, look, this was the. This goes back to Air America days. Among the different issues we had, the funding had, you know, came from people who had no idea what they were doing. We hired a bunch of basically, you know, throw off radio people. And despite that, the numbers were good. But the Democratic Alliance, which was the big funding mechanism back in the day, they were not interested. In part, I think probably they sensed a certain amount of incompetence. But broadly speaking, the big money donors don't want to give to populist movement apparatus. And radio is very much a populist medium. You know, it is. And I think that is been the dilemma on the left in terms of like competing. At least in the media.
Well, they're
going to
make the next Joe Rogan, the liberal Rogan, any minute now.
I know that. I mean, we actually like you could see even in the whole chorus thing that the people they chose had to be, you know, and regardless of whether people self-edited or any of this, you can see the people that they were funding stayed within certain parameters. And that is a function, obviously, you know. I spend my money. I'm a wealthy guy. I don't want people attacking me or my ilk.
There's also an element of top-down control. I mean, regardless of what the agenda is, it's that we have an agenda and you can't say anything that deviates from it. So if you're going to talk about Gaza, that's a problem for us because we're conflicted on that issue. So, you know, regardless of whether it's about money or whatever it's about, it's very top-down. In a way that I think is much more difficult for Democrats to manage than, you know, conservative media.
Yep. All right. So let's talk about Mamdani. We are 3 weeks out from the election now and change. In Maine... Was it Janet Mills has just said that she's going to jump in the race?
Yeah, it sounds like she's going to get in on Tuesday. Janet Mills is the two-term governor of Maine. And before that, she was either attorney general or secretary of state. She had a statewide office. She has been in Democratic politics and has been an elected official as long as Graham Plattner has been alive. So she is going to be 77.
She's 77 now. She would be 78 or 9
as a first term senator, as a freshman senator for her 6-year term. She would be 78.
So she will be.
I don't think Democrats are beating that gerontocracy rap when that's who their go to is.
She will be wheeling down a path that was blazed by Dianne Feinstein, right? I mean, that's basically what we're looking at.
She's Attorney General of Maine, by the way. My crack producer told me that. She turns 78 at the end of the year, December 30th.
It feels like
79 before getting into office. Sorry.
Plattner has solidified things a lot more than they would have hoped. Let's put it that way at this right. point. I mean, that's the way it feels from here. Now, I may.
Here's something that's important, by the way. So Plattner has solidified things. I agree with that. But there are other people in the race. And in a normal situation where you have a Democratic primary and you have a two-term governor, a sitting governor, come into the race, and there are three or four other people in the race, then you would say the field is split, and clearly the sitting governor is going to get X amount of the vote, and so she would have a very good chance to win. However, much like the New York City Democratic primary, the main Senate primary on the Democratic side is ranked choice voting. And so it doesn't matter how fractured the field is, because it will eventually get to a one-on-one situation with an instant runoff.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they could do that for federal. I guess it's the primary. And so,
it's Maine has ranked choice voting. So, we've seen this in Jared Golden's seat, for example, where he was behind. And then with ranked choice, he actually beat Bruce Poliquin and has won that House seat. So Maine just has ranked choice voting. And so this makes it much easier for Plattner to win, because he can get the Jordan Woods votes. He can get the there's a brewer. I forget his name. He can get that guy's votes. It doesn't have to be a one-on-one race for him to still take basically the not Mills support and consolidate.
Dan Cleven.
Dan Cleven, thank you.
And we should say Golden has gotten a challenger. I don't know.
That's a former Secretary of State named Matt Dunlap. In a seat that, to be honest, is Trump won that seat by 10 points. In 2024. So that's not the easiest seat to hold if you're a Democrat. Now, Dunlap is running ads that are saying, that Golden sided with Trump and the Republicans. Paul LePage is running for that seat on the Republican side, the former Maine governor.
The story I remember about LePage is that his own attorney had to intercede when LePage was taking meetings with people who were convincing him that he could legally assassinate the leader of the Maine legislature because according to sort of like some sovereign citizen theory, if they like got a sheriff to do it or something like that, the lawyer had to come in and say, Governor, you should not be meeting with these people.
So he's a mini Trump. And so Dunlap is running, like his first ad is anti Golden, anti LePage. But in that district, there's probably a lot of pro-Trump people out there, and even still, it's a very rural district, and so that's an interesting thing. And I think the DCCC is definitely going to come to Golden's aid and spend a lot of money to try to stop Dunlap from getting a toehold. The Plattner race is much more interesting because, as you said, they did not expect this wildfire. There are Democratic senators who are very intrigued with Plattner.
There's people who have come out. I mean,
and
not just Bernie.
Bernie.
No,
not just Bernie.
From New Mexico.
Martin Heinrich from New Mexico said he gave money to Plattner. Chris Murphy has said some things. White House has said some things. Warren has said some things. I think there's a lot of discontent with Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand is the head of the DSCC for being so persistent in trying to get Janet Mills, who will be 79 before being sworn in to the Senate in her first term, into the race.
Can you ever remember a time where there has been six senators willing to come out and publicly support a candidate in a seat where the DSCC is supporting a different candidate?
it's definitely unusual. I think it's a sign of the times that we're in. And there's sort of two ways to think about politics. So there's the Schumer Gillibrand way is this is a proven winner. She's won statewide before, she can do it again. And that's the end of the story, right? And then there's the other theory of politics, which is in the current media environment, in the current way in which politics is practiced, if you have someone who is an authentic voice that can really communicate, that's more important than all of these other things. And if you have someone who has a brand of being an outsider, that's more important. He's earning a lot of money. I mean, I think he raised $4 million in the last quarter. So money isn't an issue. This whole idea of experience and trust, and it's obviously not unimportant, but authenticity and the ability to go viral and the ability to speak your values is much more important than maybe it has been in the past.
If you follow the first theory, why wouldn't you bring Joe Biden back to run against Trump to run in 2028? I mean, he's been experienced. He's won before. He's certainly
Biden
very
won Maine. So why not? Why doesn't he go out for Maine?
I mean,
government, right?
How much is if Plattner wins and if Mamdani wins, like, how much does this begin to really change Democratic politics?
I mean, I'm starting to talk to people. It's interesting. Around this time, I always get a lot of requests to talk to new candidates coming in. And I think this cycle has been different. And it's different specifically because you're seeing a lot of people use this Mamdani blueprint, and it's even changed how the major party committee, not the Senate side, but on the House side, I have seen DCCC backed candidates who are endorsed by Bernie Sanders, who are speaking this language of laser focus on affordability and economic populism in ways that I haven't seen in previous years. And we're also seeing just a lot more primary challenges than we've ever seen before in what is a very top-down Democratic Party. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, and it's hard to pinpoint, but there are a lot of viable Democratic challengers out there. And a lot of it is age-based, but a lot of it is also based on these people aren't practicing the kind of politics that matter and make sense in the 21st century. This week, for example, Justin Pearson, one of the Tennessee Three, challenged Steve Cohen, who's a good Democratic mainstream candidate.
Level Democrat,
yeah.
Right.
But that's seen as not good enough anymore. And it'll be fascinating to see how successful these challengers are, because we've seen waves of challengers before, right? With AOC and others. But I think this is happening at a much broader level. This isn't just sort of the fringe Justice Dem squad kind of groups anymore. This seems broader to me.
And I think a part of it is Mamdani. Part of it is also people became more sensitive to older politicians who might be from a different generation because of what we've just experienced. David Dayan, it is always a pleasure. I wanted to get to your story about how.
Let's do it. I got till 1:30, man.
You got a couple more minutes? All right. Well, we got Francesca here, but we can bring her in a minute. Okay. Let's talk about
Francesca.
We can bring Francesca, and we'll do that. But let's get into this where anti-monopoly stands in a Trump administration, because there's a lot of contention that you had real interest in keeping Lena Khan. I think it was Josh Hawley said this. Where are we in terms of the anti-monopoly stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. So, you know, at the beginning of this administration, there was a lot more continuity in this one small avenue than we saw anywhere else across the spectrum of policy in the Trump administration. In particular, there was a merger that was challenged between Hewlett Packard Enterprises and Juniper Networks. They make back office Wi-Fi hardware. It's not very important what they do. And within days of the beginning of this administration, they challenged that merger. It was like a $10 billion merger. And the worm turned when, and this has been heavily reported, MAGA lobbyists appealed to Pam Bondi in her office to overrule the antitrust division and waive the merger through, which they did. And it was very clear that this was the way that antitrust is going to be practiced with corruption, with individual lobbyists being paid large sums of money, millions of dollars, to go over the heads of the antitrust division.
And incidentally, I'm no Matt Gaetz fan, but if you want to know why Matt Gaetz was one of the only nominees to crash beforehand, I would suggest this is why.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it. He was certainly, you know, he calls himself a conservative, right? In the aftermath of this, because there's one very important thing. When you settle a merger challenge that has been filed by the Justice Department, because of a law back in the Nixon days, because Nixon was perverting antitrust because of money, basically. He was doing decisions because he was getting big piles of money from conglomerates. There's a thing called the Tunney Act where a judge has to sign off on any settlement and prove that it's in the public interest. And the judge in this particular case between HPE and Juniper is a Biden appointee, former labor lawyer, who was very likely to scrutinize this case. So a few weeks ago, Chad Mizell, who was the chief of staff for Pam Bondi and was the ringleader, according to the reporting, of this, getting these lobbyists, listening to these lobbyists and overturning this, quit. He resigned after just 9 months on the job. And now we're starting to see a couple other, you know, the FTC filed a case against Ticketmaster for basically allowing bots to buy up a bunch of tickets and sell them on their own secondary market site, on Ticketmaster's own site. There was another lawsuit against Zillow and Redfin for having this sort of weird non-compete agreement to basically trash competition. And so you're seeing the reaction to this pay-for-play deal, which was very big in even in some of the Republican MAGA circles, because a couple of the antitrust division attorneys who got mad about this were fired. And then there was Roger Alford, who's one of them, spoke out at a conference. And so there's been a lot of attention paid to this. And in the aftermath, you see the pressure that's being placed. So Pam Bondi in her insult comedy segment that she did at the Judiciary Committee this week, four senators asked her about antitrust, which is very rare for an attorney general to be asked about that. And, you know, she bobbed and weaved and did her usual thing, but the pressure is on. And I think it's interesting that we're seeing these sort of embers around fighting corporate power not go away, despite the extreme corruption of the Trump administration.
All right, let's bring in Francesca as I ask you. I guess we won't write that at the moment.
Why not?
So, well, she's a diva, and it's difficult.
It's a whole thing.
Specifically, what is the implication for these embers to exist for something like Ellison buying Time Warner?
I think it's a big deal, and it's not time. It's Warner Brothers Discovery. So
Discovery, whatever.
By the way, that was floated 3 weeks ago, and there was a lot of talk about it, and it hasn't happened yet. And there was a story in the New York Post this week that talked about how you know, there are other bidders that Ellison might have to come up with more money. I think it sort of played into, you know, that was happening around the same time as the Kimmel thing happened. And, you know, the heavy-handed approach here to sort of reorganize media is seen, I think, pretty negatively among the public. And so it's interesting that, you know, usually when you hear a merger announcement floated, it usually happens within like 2 days.
Right.
They don't like those things to just hang out there.
Because people can take shots at it, yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, it was like 3 weeks ago when we heard about this potential Paramount Warner Brothers Discovery merger, and it hasn't been announced yet. And I think that's, you know, I think that's interesting.
All right. Well, David, let me say goodbye to you because we have Francesca coming on.
Fair enough.
And but always a pleasure. Folks, I can't recommend The American Prospect more. It is always my first read of the day. And the work you do over there continues to be great. And I implore you to move the weekend, the week roundup to a different time. You muted yourself. Yeah, I didn't want a response. So we cut out your audio. No, we can't hear you for whatever reason. Honestly. Weird. What the fuck? We can't hear you. We lost your audio. That was by mistake. Was that you or us?
No, I think it's me. I think my
okay.
My thing's
I didn't
out.
Want to give you a retort.
No. My point is that you can always just watch the weekly roundup at prospect.org. We post this video on the site. Every Friday afternoon, you can watch it throughout the weekend. You can have your cake and eat it too. You can watch.
Oh, no, I just don't want you doing it then so that we can have you on Fridays easier. But I guess now we knew the simulcast. So that's that was the issue.
And we're still having the lovely interaction that we always have. So what's the problem, actually?
Well, I guess it's fine. And also, of course, check out Organized Money podcast to catch those.
Organizedmoney.fm.
Still burning. The antitrust stuff still burning. Really appreciate it, David. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
All right, folks. Now it is my pleasure to welcome into studio, now that she's apparently like ready for us. Where's the audio? What is going on?
Wow.
Let's bring her on. The host of the Bituation Room, Francesca Fiorentini. And apparently you've got a show going.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. I am here to promote. I risked my life, flew on an airline with no air traffic controllers.
There you go. Out of Burbank?
The deer whistle. No,
were you
thank
out of Burbank?
God I wasn't out of Burbank. Yeah, Monday night, you know. Look, it's going to be a little stormy, Brooklyn. I don't want to hear it. I know how people get when it rains in this city.
How do they get? What are you talking about? You're from California.
When I lived here, I was like, eh.
Yeah, I know that's
come
true.
Out,
it is true.
Monday, right? Come on. When the rain's like hitting you from below. The point is, Monday night, Matt Lieb and I are co-headlining the Bell House. You will be otherwise engaged, I guess.
I'll be engaged at the Mamdani rally, but it's...
He's going to win. Like, he doesn't need
either
you.
Either way.
You realize he doesn't need you, right?
I know that.
We're doing this for us.
Yeah.
You might actually hurt his chances.
I mean, that's arguable. It is certainly, there's an argument.
But Monday, yes, at the Bell House, 7:30 p.m., Matt Lieb and I are co-headlining. Also, Daniel Mate of the Bat His Bar podcast is going to do a hot five, his first five ever. That'll go great.
Oh, wow.
And then also, R.M. Brown, a friend of the show, is going to be doing a
Rim
set.
Rim Brown, we call him.
Rim, sorry.
I don't think we call him that.
No, we don't call him that. We don't.
Rim Brown is going to be there doing a live set.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we'll Matt is like, how do I get out of this whole Mamdani game?
You don't need Matt.
Please don't bail.
I think you would, Brian's like, you I should be at the stand-up show. What is happening?
Well, it's great to have you here, and that show sounds great. I am bummed that to miss that.
Come through if you're not Sam Cedar or Emma or Brian or Matt. It's beautiful here. Great studio.
Oh, this is your first time in here?
First time here. Why do you think we know each other? But I've never been here. I mean, I should have been here before, but I've never been here.
All right. I mean, I there's only actually probably been, I honestly think we've probably had, how many guests in studio would you say over the lifetime of this?
Like 20.
Yeah, I would say 20. Maybe.
Okay.
20. So it's pretty rare.
21.
Yeah.
It's lovely. You got your YouTube plaques in the bathroom. I like that.
Yeah, well.
Where they belong.
I show them somewhere right next to my cracked
Right, box. Like where, when you sit down, you can watch them, you know,
yeah.
See them.
The one for a million wasn't put up until, what was it, Jamal Bowman came in studio?
No, who was it that was coming in? No, it was Maxwell Frost.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, I was better like, shine gosh, this yeah, one we should up. Put this up. Yeah, we know. We cleaned up when they're like, oh, I got a congressman.
The congressman's
coming.
Go to the trophy room, honestly, aka the bathroom.
It was
a trophy room.
So
in more ways than one.
So oppressive.
How do I turn myself up?
Oh, in the
like, how, yeah.
Do you have like a little.
I have four buttons. Or no, I have no, it down here. No oh, down here?
Are you kidding? It's all jerry rigged. It's all jerry rigged.
Oh, weird.
Where is she plugged in?
Yeah.
There's a dial on that.
Is there
thing
like
right
a,
there.
Is this where I get more morphine?
Yeah, right there.
There's a on the side. There.
Oh, got it. Okay.
You got it?
Yeah. There we go. That's okay. Lovely. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Once again, to remind y'all, we will be running the stream for the Mamdani event on Monday.
We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Every American will soon receive their own MedBed card.
I can't wait.
I want to be in one right now. So bad.
Oh, I saved a couple of clips that I wanted to, because you have, I mean, I'm not going to, like, I don't want you to, I'm not going to label you.
I have what?
Well, you are familiar with this Antifa organization.
I am
correct?
Familiar with the Frantifa.
The Frantifa?
Who I hope is watching right now, and I hope will be live there on Monday. Never heard of the Antifa, though.
I feel like you did. Have you been involved in these protests up in Portland? Things are going crazy.
I wish. But shout out to them.
Here, let's play this clip. This is Kristi Noem. And she is saying, you know, they're having to deal with this issue that they want to send in the U.S. military
mm-hmm.
to fight against the riots that are taking place in Portland
mm-hmm.
and to fight against the armies of Antifa / ISIS, apparently, or something.
Frogs.
The people in frog outfits.
Yeah, they're multiplying.
And the problem she has is that all the public officials in the city are saying this is nothing. What you're talking about is happening. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to push back on this in a cabinet meeting here.
They're out on the streets. And then I was in Portland, went out and back on Tuesday and met with the governor, met with the mayor, met with the chief of police and the superintendent of the highway patrol. They are all lying and disingenuous and dishonest people. Because as soon as you leave the room, then they make the exact opposite response. So we're looking at new facilities to purchase. They're in Portland, too, and we're going to double down. And I told them if they didn't meet our demands for safety and security on the streets and work with us, then we were going to bring in more federal law enforcement. So I want to thank Pete and the Department of War for all their help. They've been fantastic. But
slumpy over there.
And work with Pam on that. We're going to send more of our resources and men and women out there to keep
I mean...
Look at the teacups.
Yeah, it's just having tea. She...
High tea.
Can we just play that one part again? Because it really does sound like they're liars. They all said they liked me. And then as soon as I leave the room, they all start talking and joking about
me. They talk
me.
Behind my back. And they said I had too much filler, but actually it was very, very light. I did not buy it on Groupon like the first time when I did it. I'm not 25 anymore.
Met with the mayor, met with the chief of police and the superintendent of the Highway Patrol. They're all lying. And,
they're all sluts and they're ugly and trash. And I did not like their handbags either.
I didn't want to go to the party anyway.
When I put out my duct tape wallets, they all said that they were nice and that I shouldn't put sparkles on them. And then as soon as I turn around, I realize they've put sparkles on their duct tape wallets yep. as a way of like trying to make me look like I
they
don't
told me
have
it wasn't
duct tape
cool.
wallets.
It wasn't cool anymore. And they told me they weren't having a sleepover and they were having a sleepover.
And we played the clip of her in Portland the other day and literally looking down upon one guy in a banana suit, no, in a chicken suit, and like five other people playing the Benny Hill song. And all they could say was like, it gets much worse at night. Let's just...
The Halloween creatures come out at night, actually.
It is... They are... It's interesting because... Portland is a city that you can get people to pop off in Portland. Like, you know, like Portland, Seattle, like the West Coast, you know, Oakland, protesters there, they are unafraid. They will get aggressive and...
Well, let's define aggressive. I mean, I also think that Portland is a place, much like San Francisco and Seattle to a lesser extent, where everyone also has like a box of costumes in their closet. Like, everyone's got costume box, and they will bring it out for Pride, for Halloween, or for a protest against, you know, the pigs or whatever.
But you've like, had, but like, you know, like, when I think
like
of,
it's
like,
going to be fun.
When I think of
say.
Cities, like, where if they were to bring in, if you had told me, like, 2 months ago, 5 months ago, 6 months ago, they're going to bring in a bunch of federal guys in riot gear into Seattle, I wouldn't be surprised, or Portland, I wouldn't be surprised to hear like, okay, guys are going to, they're going to throw tear gas and guys are going to throw the tear gas back. I mean, this is, and there has been a restraint, it feels like, from protesters that has in many ways like completely frustrated what like Miller was hoping to happen.
It's very like, yeah, the stick meme, you know, do something, because they really want it to be 2020 again. They're like, oh, we just need to kill another unarmed black man, you know, and make it really gruesome this time. Like, they want to relive that. And mind you, they were in power during that moment. And it's kind of a preview of what we're living through now. And it's something that, you know, sadly, the police have only been more militarized. And so they're all poised, you know, to crack skulls. Because in L.A., for example, I mean, the cops were, as in Portland, which, you know, it's interesting because, yes, the Portland PD are like, you know, the chief is saying it's not dangerous, it's fine. But they also are protecting ICE. They are protecting CBP. They are also doing the crowd control. No Portland activist is a friend of the Portland PD. And in LA, it was the same thing. They were there to crack the skulls of the demonstrators, whereas CBP ICE were there to, you know, abduct a nanny.
Right.
So they are, you know, it's just, it's a moment of what does a democratically run city do? In charge of the entire police force, and what can they do? I mean, in LA, it's basically nothing. Karen Bass had a moment that was literally by chance, which was painted as like, wow, she's really standing up. She wasn't really, it was by chance. And you got elected officials over there, the city council members are basically like, we're doing nonviolent direct action trainings. We don't know. But there is no world in which the police are actually going to protect protesters, protect them.
No.
Right? They are actually protecting ICE and CBP, even though, you know, they're not letting them use a bathroom.
I mean, I think there's also, I mean, I think there's statutory reasons, and I think that there's
probably
like, you know, I think having that expectation of the police, both from a cultural and statutory perspective, is wrong. The city can like make things more difficult, but it's not conceivable that we're going to have police be directed.
Protecting or serving.
Directing, right. I mean, directing, being directed to inhibit ICE.
Right.
That's not going to happen. But you do have moments like that outside of like Chicago where you had that police force that clearly they were pissed. And you've got CPDs getting tear gassed. Mm. And we've seen it in this city. When the cops don't feel like doing anything, they figure out ways of not doing anything.
For sure.
And so
No, but it goes back to 2020, right? Of like, ultimately 2020 was about, oh, who do police actually protect? What are they there for?
Of course.
And I think we're sort of reliving that moment, but again, without the mass uprising. I think there is a lot more defeatism, but I do think the humor, as we've all been speaking to, I don't know if you guys saw the video of someone just going up to an ICE agent with a tiny hand.
Yes.
I mean, beautiful.
That's beautiful. In fact, we have new characters have showed up at the Portland Detention Center. And I think the value of this, I mean, we've been talking about this for the past couple of days. I've never been a big wear a costume to a protest thing.
No way.
Surprising.
Yeah, surprising.
Right? I know. I come off as a sort of like a bread and circus. Type
yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
But no.
Clowning, just open clowning.
I am more like, you know, put on a sport coat and a tie. So that when you go to a protest,
try to get a box pop. Excuse me.
Exactly.
I shall remind you of posse comitatus, sir. Exactly.
But the costumes are so effective.
Yeah.
When the narrative is trying to be like, we've got to get federal authorities there to protect people from people like this.
I mean, who's wearing a more ridiculous costume?
What?
Let's be real.
Like, we've got to. We've got to protect them from these people. Jimmy the Dino.
Oh, a polar bear.
The polar bear, a turkey, a pony.
My God.
What are
Is
those
that a
ponies
Pokemon?
Called? What are those pretty my ponies?
My little ponies.
My
wow.
little pony.
Yes.
And I think especially as Gnome is doing the whole Bukele El Salvador model of sending in film crews with your cops to get propaganda. This you can't show this then.
Get out of my
yeah.
shot.
Give
I don't know the, if I can swear now.
Cut!
Get out of my shot. Katie Porter's going to come in.
Cut! Can
get out
get
of
the...
my shot. get
can
out of my
shot. Get the raccoon, please, off the set.
That's what he meant when it was scarier at night, is there's a lot more costumes.
Dude, is that Left
You should
shark?
See it at night. There's sharks.
That's Left Shark. That's Antifa Shark.
And a panda, a whole bear? That's scary. Does that mean, like, China?
Is that American flag guy a pro-ICE guy?
Yeah, you can't tell.
You never know.
At
this point, I think it's anti. Look, I'm telling you, Portland, let me know if I'm wrong. You had these costumes. You had them. You yeah, didn't even have to go buy them. Yeah.
But this is like, it makes it so difficult for them to... And really the battle here, right? Like we watch Kristi Noem say, they're lying. They're lying. All of the police, the mayor, they're all lying. The chief of police is lying. They're liars.
They actually can't control their city.
And then, you know, I'm sure Hannity runs that clip and is like, the entire Portland Democratic blue run city are a bunch of liars. But they're... The people that need to be convinced are the people in the sort of like surrounding areas of Portland who say like, what is going on down there is terrifying. And I'm glad the feds are coming to clean this up. And they can't do that. They cannot communicate that because of, you know, whatever it is. My Pretty Pony is there.
Well, it's My Little Pony. This is the second time and last time I will correct you. And... Also, it's important to know that the ICE detention center in Portland is in like a nice area. Ooh. Like there's a Tesla store right in front. Like it's more upper middle class. It's not where like the normal Portland, you know, protests go down. So it's like a whole different neighborhood. And so I think that's also doing it where like you have people who otherwise might not be go out to the demonstration who are there and showing up and are like, they were probably part of the Tesla takedown protest too. And they're like, yeah, it's chill. And again, the administration really, and I hate saying that, like, they really want a moment, because I think that we've heard mayors say that in order to temper protests. Like, don't give them what they want, which is basically code for don't protest, don't resist, don't stand up for your neighbors who are being disappeared right now. You know, so it's, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, but definitely show up in more costumes.
I think, like, you know, I've seen a video of people following ICE vehicles, honking. That is very, very effective. Fortunately, like, a lot of the people that ICE have arrested, who have been protesting, who were charged with, like, impediment, or they have all gotten up. All those cases have been thrown out of court as soon as they get there. But we still have this problem. Do we have that footage of the mother outside the school?
Yes.
Let's play this. This is coming. What number is this?
It's four. Yep.
Number four. Yeah. This is in Chicago. I mean, how... I just, it is like, what is going, I don't know. Like, I feel like I can understand the mentality of cops. I mean, I grew up with people who got in fights with cops, like, literally, but also people who became cops. Mm-hmm. And so I understand.
Were they the smartest in their class?
Well, nobody, nobody in my...
We all know the person that went off to be a cop, and it's like, uh-huh.
My high school was not the type of school where everybody's, like, going around showing whether they're smart or not. That was not, like,
no, I know, but, like...
Like, literally,
I just know, like, the dopiest kid in my high school. Like, the dopiest white kid in my high school then became a cop in the local town.
They were like Buffy. They were buffs. It wasn't, I don't know. They were no, I couldn't tell. They were just like,
mm-hmm, violence buffs.
Townie-ish.
It's tough in Massachusetts.
It's townie. I mean, I don't know. But
anyway.
But the point being, like, the mentality of these guys is not so, you know, like, I'm doing something for the community.
No.
And also, a lot of these guys are, you know, F-words, and they're, you know, they're doing wrong things. And so sometimes you got to be tough with them. This type of stuff, like, I can't even imagine what goes through the mind of a guy who is tackling a woman waiting for their kids. And people around them are going, like, the kids are in the school. What are you doing? I just... This just is so beyond. These videos are incredibly difficult to watch. Twelve, 13 masked ICE guys.
This is the pickup line.
Classic.
Wait. Wait, you guys came to the school to do this?
They have a warrant. They haven't asked for a warrant. My name is Jocelyn from Cicero. They don't have a warrant. They didn't ask for one. They forcefully opened the door to Trump. It was locked. It was locked.
You're going to record this. Don't get any closer to me, all right? Michael, just stay back, please. You're being arrested for it.
Yeah, but you guys came to the school?
They forced us out of the car. They forced us out of the car. They were following us. They were on Central.
Whoa.
My sister.
I mean, I can't imagine what is going through the minds of these guys. Must be so, I can't track it.
I think it's very ideological. Meaning
they just hate brown people.
Absolutely. I mean, that's who they're recruiting. I'm doing some long form videos on my channel, the Situation Room, youtube.com/FrannyFio. Anyway, the point is you see the kind of propaganda that this administration and DHS uses to recruit these guys. It's all 4chan memes, straight up. Okay, it is white nationalist propaganda. That's who they're recruiting. I can't remember where outside of, but there was, you know, a woman who was filming ICE, and she's like, this better not be for your spank bank, because they were filming them. The guy says, nothing from your genetic lineage would be in my spank bank. Like, this is that kind. Yeah. These are the freed Jan Sixers. These are the, you know, maybe they're former three percenters. Maybe they're currently in militias. Who the hell cares? There's no background checks. There's no nothing on these people. You're absolutely right. There is something more, far more respectable about being a cop, far more about ideally serving your community. They are recruiting white nationalists and who love it. They want to see brown women crying. Because they're all little Stephen Millers, and they were called a puto when they were in eighth grade by a Latino kid.
Yeah, and this is their payback. Yeah. I mean, that is, it is, Verbena says, I wouldn't try getting inside a Nazi's head except for kinetically. honestly, like, the, I just don't know if I've experienced this level of, like, intense anger towards a subset of people in this country, like those ICE people. I just, it's the most, one of the most despicable sort of things, like, to actually, like, I don't know.
The worst, I think, is in, I mean, like, in places like LA, where there's, like, a lot of, like, Latino and Asian ICE members. And you're like, what is going on? And they need to be called out. They need to be called out specifically.
I feel like that I get almost more because there's this sort of, like, you like sense maybe growing up that they weren't accepted as Americans, and this is the way that they prove it. Like that,
take it,
like,
to whiteness. Yeah.
Nationalism more sort of extreme on the periphery. Like yeah,
I like the, like this is, you know, it's sort of like the, you know, this is the way they're going to get acceptance on some level. Mm-hmm.
There will be like an ICE agent's grandmother who will get swept up like that. We're just like, you know, without counting down the days for something like
that
to happen.
I would imagine. And, but the, I mean, this is, and it, and to be clear, people should understand this. We are just on the cusp of what we're going to see when this funds, like, you know, they've been recruiting now for a month or two. A lot of these new recruits are going to come online, and they are, my understanding, I have been told that they are getting less training than the people who are already there. And so we're going to see somebody, like, you know, we've already had people shot.
Yep.
This is going to start to become a more regular occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
But also they're going to accidentally gas themselves more and more.
That's true.
With less training.
That's true. It's going to cut both ways. So there's going to be
in
some
in the car.
There's going to be, we're going to have some opportunities to, you
bump
know,
the gas canister off the side view mirror.
Yeah. Like that was amazing. But we have footage that talking about that. We have a was it a teacher? There is a teacher at a Chicago elementary school who was working. You recall the when the ICE agent was stuck in traffic. Mm-hmm. They took a.
They don't have sirens.
Well, they didn't want to. I don't know. They're driving their town and country or whatever it is. The guy stands there in the middle of the street through the window of his car. He doesn't do it very effectively. Throws tear gas out mm-hmm. the window of his car. Ends up tear gassing himself. But it drops out and it's out in front of a school.
Yep.
There was a 2-year-old child in a car in that traffic.
He was going for a walk with his
mom. Oh, with the mom. Yeah. Who had to go to the hospital. And here is a teacher at that elementary school who also was tear gassed because this stuff is not contained. It's not like, a 5-foot radius. You can't. And they threw multiple canisters out the windows. Here's she is at a press conference. This was yesterday.
Last Friday was beautiful weather, so I left my classroom windows open as I was teaching a lesson on addition and subtraction to my first graders. Then suddenly, I'm hearing commotion outside. I could hear helicopters circling overhead. I could hear the horns of brave rapid responders warning us of kidnappers in the neighborhood. I could hear ping after ping coming from my phone, neighbors trying to warn us so that we could keep our children safe. As I picked up the phone, I opened a message from my colleague that teaches fifth grade. She was walking to Rico Fresh on her lunch break. Just after she crossed the intersection, less than 100 feet from our building, she sights ice and begins blowing the whistle I had given her that very morning. As she blew a broken cadence, indicating a sighting had occurred, ICE agents rolled down the window to their white SUV and began throwing tear gas canisters at our community. They gassed many of our neighbors, including a two-year-old who was out walking with their family. Tear gas filled the streets, blowing into the parking lot of Rico Fresh and towards the direction of our playground across the street. I immediately started reaching out to my community networks. I coordinated with staff to find out the needs of our families. I checked in with teachers, and by dismissal, we had the support of over 100 community members, neighbors lined up and down Central Park Avenue and Armitage, further than I could see, creating safe passage for our children and families, and sending a clear message. ICE is not welcome in our community.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we need to see. People need to see. I mean, Chicago seems like, particularly Chicago teachers,
absolutely.
This is a union that has been incredibly active and strong since, you know, they had a strike under Karen Lewis. I think it was like 14, 15 years ago now. And they were the most prominent union to do social justice unionization. So that their ties to the community run so deep and strong. That this type of stuff works really well. But this is stuff that has to happen around the country.
You guys watched that Brandon Johnson clip already?
Which one?
Where he was talking about, public safety and bringing down crime in the city of Chicago and how militarism has never worked, you know, citing times in the 90s and in the 70s when this has been tried. And it's like, you know, Mayor Johnson is a product of strong unions.
Right.
And he is a product of that city coming together and, you know, choosing a different path. And I think Chicago has the makings, I think, of a real vision out of this versus just, this is illegal, it's bad, you know, wow. But rather like community, teacher solidarity, worker solidarity, and having a mayor who will go to bat angrily and stand up and say, there's not a crime problem here. He took money and moved it from Chicago police into public safety initiatives that have been working. Of course, everyone wants to say, oh, it doesn't work in 2 years.
Right.
Screw it. You know, oh, it doesn't work. You know, decriminalizing X, Y, or Z here. It didn't work in 2 years. Get him out of there. And so this is that tough work. And I mean, this is why we have to be supporting mayors like Brandon Johnson and not buying into these crime narratives. But I feel like Johnson is the only mayor I've seen to defend his community in the way that I think it needs to be. How much they can do concretely, again, I really do think it's like civil disobedience. But at least he's saying, look, the crime narrative is bogus.
Let's play this. Yeah, I think it is.
But people to offer it. No, listen, Mark, I get to answer my question now. You've asked it.
But people,
Mark.
No, Mark, I'm answering my questions. Of course they are. But you're not going to be able to avoid that if we don't do the things that actually work. We are not split on this issue. The fact of the matter is, no one has asked me to send federal troops into this city to make it safe. It has never come up. It never came up during the campaign. It's never come up in the first 2 years. The fact of the matter is, we are driving violence down on this city, and we're using every single resource that's available to us. Dr. King said this right here in Chicago, the National Conference on New Politics. What did he say? He said, militarism is a sickness. I am trying to eradicate the sickness from this city and from this country. I'm going to work hard every single day to protect the people who are caught up in violence in this city.
Yeah.
And he also, we mentioned this the other day, basically signed an order that limits what kind of what prevents ICE from doing any type of staging work, any type of like work on city property. And again, these mayors are limited to some extent with how sort of like proactive they can be. They can't actively fight ICE. But what they can do is make it much, much harder for ICE to operate.
They're not collaborating. I mean, I think, again, like I mentioned earlier, I think with the protesters, they have been collaborating in terms of some of the repression. But I think the question is moving forward for the Democrats and for a narrative and for, you know, finding a way out of fascism is what does being a sanctuary city actually mean? Other than just like, yay, like we're going to try not to hand over immigrants to ICE directly, which, you know, obviously this is good, but it's like, can you actually protect them? Can we protect people? You know, where and how and what guarantees when they've been living in the city for decades in terms of citizenship? I mean, when you see everything that's playing out, amnesty doesn't sound radical to me. Like, making people legal and unafraid in this country is not
Ronald
a radical
Ronald Reagan
idea.
Did it!
Exactly. And, you're just like, you know what? They want to paint the left like, oh, you want amnesty for 11 million immigrants? Sure. Sure, man. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, first off, this is unsustainable, the path that they're on. And maybe, to some extent, like, let's put it this way. If it did not involve such suffering for people who don't deserve it, I'm not saying that anybody deserves suffering, although in certain circumstances I could probably be convinced.
Like one or two.
I've got a list. But were it not for the actual human suffering this engenders, whether it's like children losing their parents, parents losing their children, et cetera, et cetera. Family members being torn apart, people dying in detention, whatnot. The implications of tearing these people out of your communities, like the Labor Department has said, like, we're like just precipitously close to precariously close, I should say, to a food shortage in different parts of the country.
Anyone know plow skills? I don't know.
Exactly.
You need to know how to plow.
But from a construction standpoint,
God.
We're going to feel the economic impacts. We very well may be now, and it's obviously harder to tell without any data coming out, at least, you know, how widespread it is. But we're going to feel the implications of this. And people are feeling it in, you know, communities being ripped apart and whatnot. Which is going to make this untenable at one point. But then we're going to have this, like, force of tens of thousands of yahoos armed and just walking around looking for something to do.
Forcing us to the field to pick lettuce.
If you're on Medicaid.
Right. Oh, yeah, great option.
You got to get on Medicaid for that. But it's going to get very ugly.
It'll probably all work out.
I think so.
Optimist Matt.
Yeah.
You want to see Joe Rogan talk about
immigration? Yeah, hold on for 1 second, though. No. I see this Saturn girl has written me a huge IM, and I can't read the whole thing, but I know what she's writing about because I also saw this. We were talking about this in the office. Hey, Sam, I wanted to respond to your response to my IM yesterday. Marjorie Taylor Greene openly breaking with the Republicans on ACA subsidies is further evidence of a fracture on the right based on class. Marjorie Taylor Greene was on MSNBC talking about her constituents are demanding Congress protect health care subsidies while most of the Republican Party and their donors want to get rid of them. You've also been playing. All right. This is just too long. But I will say that I did see that. And I do think that there are. And maybe it's more in the sort of like influencer sort of sections of the Republican and conservative movement have a sense of like Donald Trump is not going to live forever in one fashion or another. And they're staking out a territory that is you know, they had success in terms of some measure of populism, and they're staking that out.
I also think.
Are you saying she's a real populist?
No.
I think she might be
No. I think, like I say,
you have to give her a win.
What?
You have to give her a win here. She's a real populist, and I think it's really upsetting that
I think she got shut out of Trump's orbit.
No, for sure.
And realizes, like, oh, what are the paths I have to follow here?
It's so stupid. She was out there with the Epstein victims. She's out there, like, you know, at the press conference. I mean, it's incredible. What I'm saying is stupid on Trump's behalf for not just throwing her a bone. And it's all because, like, he doesn't want to fuck her. You know what I mean?
I think it was like Laura Loom.
It really is, because she's like, you haven't had enough surgery to be like an eight. And I'm like, and you know, and it's like.
And Laura's put in an F.
Laura's
put the hex on you, and I can't do it. It was definitely something. Something put her on the outs. And
she sees a lane. I'm being very facetious about the populist thing. She just sees a lane.
Oh yeah,
she sees 100%. A lane. She's taking it. She's reading the room on Israel and other things. And also, she's an anti-Semite, so it works.
She's up there, like Nick Fuentes. There's a lot of those that are realizing, like, okay, I'm on the outs here. How do I maintain what? And they're guessing on what's going to be the aftermath.
Absolutely. The aftermath is Vance, bolstered by Teal.
Yeah.
You got to have an opposition to that.
Yeah. And I think, well, I'm not sure that that's so different. Like, Vance sort of, you know, he also has the ability to pretend who he is. Remember, like, he...
Does he?
Well, he came on...
He just changed his name four times.
He's changed his name four times. His whole thing was, like... You know, like a red state populist type of guy in his book.
Ellis. What is exactly. JD? Is it John Deere Vance?
I have no idea.
James David, I think.
I think it's Jesus David. Democrat.
I thought
exactly.
It was
exactly. But it is. You know, there is definitely a how sustainable it is. We'll see. Right. I mean. Swalwell put out a tweet the other day saying that, like, his Republican colleagues are ready to abandon Trump because they're convinced that the Epstein files are going to come out, and I don't buy it. I don't buy the abandoning of anything. And I'm not suggesting, like, this break within the context of the conservative movement is not anything that's going to change the course
of
what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's just a bet that is being placed on what happens if, you know, Trump gets hit by a bus or his dementia just becomes, he's not able to inject himself with whatever he's getting injected with in his hand every other month.
Oh, yeah, I like this conspiracy theory you've been
That actually is, I don't know, I mean, he's
got to have one.
You got to have one or two. Or if, the Epstein thing becomes too problematic.
But that hasn't shown up in the polling at all.
What's
like, that? That Republican voters actually care about that. The media people, it's tough for, like, Tim Dillon and Joe Rogan to respond to the Epstein sort of sellout. But the voters don't give a shit at all.
Oh, yeah, I'm not convinced. But it may create pressure in the influencer class. I mean, who knows? But when you have no present path, you basically speculate to where things are going to be.
Sure.
And I think that's what's going on there. All right. Let's turn to, should we do all three of the Rogan ones? And like, what's the sequencing of these,
I think we go immigration because that's the spinoff of what we've been talking about now. And then we can go to Epstein.
And then we go to
Just go dumber and dumber and dumber.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah. So here's Joe Rogan. And he's like, he's had a moment where he said this before, too, about immigration. But there is such a lack of thinking here. It's fascinating that this is like the this is like.
What is he dressed as? Is this a priest costume? They're dressed
looks like a Star Wars outfit.
It's a priest costume. Whenever Duncan Trussell's on, they dress up.
Oh God, I'm sorry you know
that's
that.
That's a bit.
Part of the job.
The immigration thing. The way it looks is horrific. It looks, it when you're are just arresting people in front of their kids and. Just normal, regular people that have been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
That everybody who has a heart can't get along with that.
No.
Everybody who has a heart sees that and goes, that can't be right.
I don't think so.
They can't be right. That can't be the only way to do this.
Right.
Because you have to think, look, yeah, we have to have a border. Yes, it should have been secure. Yes, they should make sure you know who everybody is.
All right, pause
it
just for one second. I just want to like unpack all this level of complete thoughtlessness and stupidity involved in this. Half of the undocumented immigrant, or I should say half of the unauthorized people in this country who are undocumented immigrants or who he perceives as illegal immigrants, they didn't cross the border. They came in with papers and just stayed. Mm-hmm. That's just like one thing. Like, this is not about securing the border.
Invasion.
Unless you're like going to put RFID chips in people as they come in with their papers. That's stupid. And when he says like they've been here for 20 years, well, okay, what's the cutoff going to be? Yeah. Like, what are we going to do with the cutoff? Like, are we going to do it at 20? Like, if you've been here for 19 years, you get to stay. What if you've been here for 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
5 years? 2 years. Like, what if you have family here? Like, everything he's saying is just so dumb and thoughtless. And what did you think was going to happen? Like, what do you think was happening before? And what did you think was going to happen after Trump? Like, the idea that the Biden administration was just letting, like, Obama, they're just letting criminals run around and not going after them. It's absurd. It's absurd. But Obama deported more people than Trump has.
Well, what's the actual problem being solved here? Is it the country's getting too brown, or is it the economy? Like, right? Like, it's never addressed which one it is. And, like, it's clear that what's being done now is because the country's getting too brown.
Yeah.
Well, it's mission creep. The whole thing is mission creep. What's striking to me about this is that Rogan sounds like a Democrat. This is what Democrats say. Constantly.
You should check.
Yes, the border needs to be secure. Of course I believe the border needs to be secure, but the way it's being done is really bad. Well, is the border insecure? No, it's not, actually. Are there criminals in this country? No, there actually are not, to the extent that you think there are, right? And there
immigrants
would
are less likely to do crimes.
Like, exactly. What about, where are all the drug busts that we're missing out on? How come we don't have that footage of all these, you know,
it's amazing how Trenda
kids
Agua, they just, they hide in mom costumes and
yes.
grandpa costumes. Like, the idea, we're rounding up Trenda Agua and dangerous criminals. Where's the footage? Because they're always with a camera crew. Where's the footage of the shootouts?
Yeah.
Where's the guns being fired at? Where's the knife that was pulled on an ice
it's
guy?
It's very like, El Chifa Hospital
have
raid.
Camera crews. Like, we, how is it that they've been rounding up all these people and we haven't seen one single incident of anybody fighting back except for a guy in a dinosaur costume using telekinesis to push the ice bag?
Frog. Also, can we perfect Tren de Aragua?
No, I'm not doing that.
Aragua.
I don't know.
Aragua.
No.
Si se puede. Si se puede.
All right, let's hear like him espouse like sort of these heartfelt concerns, because, dude, what we're seeing right now is as much a product of your work. Like, if your work has done anything, it has brought us to this point. Outside of like, you know, maybe educating people.
Remember when he posted
MMA?
After deliberating very hard, I've decided to support Donald Trump.
Yeah,
what was that deliberation like?
Yeah. you have to think.
Is that a bong?
Yeah, we have to have a border. Yes, yeah. It should have been secure. Yes, they should make sure you know who everybody is before they get in.
Yeah.
But when people been here for 20 years, like, come on. That's crazy. Like,
yeah.
Let's find a way. If they've been productive members of society for 20 years, no criminal record, they worked the entire time, they paid taxes, find them a pathway to citizenship. Find a way where you can do this thing that you want to.
It's called amnesty, and they just become a citizen.
Yes. Like, what's the pathway?
Again, like, you what more do like you want centrist. Them to do?
They've been here for 20 years. Listen to what he's saying. They've been here for 20 years. They're working hard. They're raising children. Never committed a crime.
Pay taxes.
We got to find them a pathway to citizenship.
A yellow brick road.
What would that pathway look like? Okay, this is what it is. You got to figure out a scavenger hunt.
It's like Dora the Explorer.
First, you go to a trust camp, and you need to climb the wall with the rope. Uh-huh. Like, what's the pathway? The pathway is you've already made the pathway. That's it.
Congrats.
They're productive members of society.
These are people. What's so ironic about people like Rogan who hate bureaucracy. They hate big government. Their whole shtick is being anti-establishment, right? Walk a day in the shoes of an immigrant navigating the immigration system in the United States of America. You want to see bureaucracy? These people are the most tracked, the most followed, the most check in with X, Y, and Z office of any American, right? Like of any of us. We could not fathom. Most of us can't even pass a citizenship test. So like, it's insane to be like, oh, and they're not. Yeah, because you don't know about the immigration system in this country. No. You've never talked about it on your show before. And I'd like to hear an effing, I'm sorry for misleading my audience about this. I guess I shouldn't have endorsed Donald Trump because it was so clear that this is where it was going.
Keep going.
Worked the entire time.
Yeah.
They paid taxes. Find them a pathway to citizenship. Find a way where you can do this thing that you want to do, which is keep terrorists and cartel members from getting across the border with drugs that kill 100,000 people a year. Okay, but also
Purdue
have a
Pharmacy?
Fucking heart.
Right, did Purdue cross the Rio Grande?
Because if you don't, you're not going to get anybody on your side. If you're doing this stuff publicly, throwing women to the ground, handcuffing people just for existing on the wrong side of the dirt.
Yeah.
Not a criminal. Not the only crime they ever committed was coming over here as a kid.
Yeah.
Not a crime. They probably didn't even know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
man. Just,
you know, a lot of kids got snuck across when they were already born in Mexico. And they've grown up their entire life in America. They can't even speak Spanish.
Yeah.
And they could get sent back.
Because their parents are the criminals.
Yeah, it's called DACA. And incidentally, it's not a crime to cross the border.
By the way, that clip is so inflammatory to his fans. If you go on his YouTube channel, they are furious with him.
They're furious because
this liberal horseshit
he's
spewing. Yeah, they're furious. They're like, I'm so sick of rich people who aren't feeling the implications of unfettered immigration, just telling me I need to have a heart.
Yeah, it's not what you're feeling, idiot.
I mean, we are at supposedly net zero immigration right now. In fact, border crossing supposedly at an all-time low. Immigrants coming into this country at an all-time low, and joblessness is going up.
But this is the mission creep. Yeah. This is and Vance did this on the campaign trail, which is, you know, these people are taking your jobs. They're taking your housing. They're the reason you can't have affordable housing is because of immigrants. And they're going to keep on hitting this button unless Democrats actually have a working class agenda for them.
Exactly. And also an actual position on immigration
and that
is like able to be articulated to people. Here is Joe Rogan. We're going to go from dumb to dumber. Here's Joe Rogan. Just like how you don't automatically know this as like even a like just the most casual sort of consumer of news is so beyond me.
Especially as Joe Rogan is somebody who's taken phone calls from the Vice President of the United States on this exact topic.
But this is fascinating. This is where Joe Rogan begins to realize that, oh, it's the Democrats who are trying to get the Epstein files released. I kid you not. Incidentally, Mike Johnson not swearing in Greval. Grijalva, because she represents the 218th vote for a discharge petition, which forces the a bill to the floor saying all the Epstein files are released. Here's Joe Rogan. Apparently, and this is from October 9th, right? Like, this is contemporary.
Yes. Yeah.
This isn't from
October 9th, 2016.
2012 or something.
This is saying that the Democrats want it to come out and the Republicans don't. Party lines. Let's ask Perplexity, why won't they release the Epstein?
So I was going to. There's Eric Swalwell, who's, I guess.
I read it wrong. No, so the Democrats were not. The Democrats were pushing this. The Republicans fought against it. Okay. I fucked that up. So,
voted
along party lines. So they're probably told to do this.
Right. So what the fuck's in there, man?
Well, so then they've been.
Hold on for a second. I just want to help Perry Mason out here.
Mm-hmm. Headphones on a potato.
It has been widely reported that the White House was whipping against this vote for weeks. Mike Johnson widely reported that he dismissed Congress for 5 weeks over the summer to avoid this.
Well, that's a disgusting lie.
Like,
that's insane.
And this is the Epstein files. Like, what is this guy paying attention to? It's unbelievable. Okay. It seems to be. Somebody's telling them not to vote for
this.
No,
he immediately does a whataboutism. Oh, okay, so now they only care about Epstein because Trump's in power. This is what the right's been saying. You know, since the Democrats have voted this way, have made it an issue, is like, you just care because it's Trump. And it's like, that he, you know, that now he's president. It's like, yeah, but also, you know, there's nothing like a beautiful friend. What is it? I can't remember. A friend is a wonderful thing to have. You know, every day is a new secret. Mm-hmm. Also because they were best friends. Anyway.
Go back a little bit and play this.
Democrats were pushing this. The Republicans fought against it. Okay.
Okay.
I fucked that up. Yeah. So 51-49 is it's crazy. Cool. So they just voted along party lines. So they're probably told to do this.
Right. So what the fuck's in there, man?
Well, so then they've been... not only is the government shut down right now, I think that might affect it some, but they're at recess, Congress is. And so this, Eric Swalwell said this stuff today. And it might not be true.
Oh, yeah, that might not be true. We've got to be skeptical, guys.
This week, they confided that Trump's movement support is fading. As one told me, this Epstein bomb is about to drop. And no one wants to defend a pedo protector. It's just a matter of time, Swalwell said in a thread. One Republican just texted me that there's a discharge vote on Epstein. They expect a jailbreak of over 100 members. Trump will go nuts, he added.
So they said, this further goes on to say that if they get back, that this is the first thing on the docket, and that's sort of what's holding them back in recess right here.
Wow. Whoa. A wild history in real time.
Dude.
No.
This is a wild scene.
That's totally wild.
Crazy.
I can't believe this.
Things happen, man. Anyway.
Meanwhile, his listeners are mad about his immigration.
Exactly. They're still so steamed about the fact that he was, like, upset about mothers being, slammed to the floor. All right. If you're wondering what is going on, and again, the most viewed show in the country, at least in the run-up to the election, right, where, you know, and capturing the imagination of all of media and the Democrats are like, we've got to find our own Joe Rogan. Here's a little insight into how this guy's brain works or doesn't work. This is a clip of, is this from The Dollop? It's Dave Anthony.
Shout out.
And Gareth Reynolds.
Shout
and
out.
And Gareth Reynolds.
Love y'all.
Dave and I used to be friendly, but we got into a fight around the 2016, I think it was, election.
Was it door related?
Yes, it was.
No, that's sad.
It is sad. I always liked Dave. I've known him for a very long time. And Dave was a writer on The Marin Show.
Oh, shit.
And
I knew that.
This is a story of when at one point, and, you know, Marin's show was about him as a podcaster. And so, you know, the show would often deal with like podcasters and other podcasters and podcasts and whatnot. And here's Dave telling a story of one of the episodes of Marin they were hoping to write.
When I worked on Marin, we were looking for someone to do a guest role, like athletic guy, to try and get Mark in shape. And we were like, what about Rogan? He's like a big athletic guy. So the two showrunners were like, all right, if we go out to a guy like this, who's kind of big, we should be very careful with how it's written. And so they went through all of his old interviews and magazines. They took actual things he had said from the interviews and put it into the script as if like that's his beliefs. Right? That's what he thinks. Marin sends Rogan the script, and Rogan calls up Marin, and he's furious. And he's like, what are you doing making me look like such a fucking idiot? Because Joe Rogan doesn't know what the fuck he's saying most of the time and just babbles shit. And so when he sees it written, he's like, man, this guy sounds like a fucking moron. That stuff you said.
Yep. I love this.
I mean, that's the reveal at the end of the movie on how a country just completely, like, literally got lost. Like we don't know where we are. Mom, I don't know where I am. Like, I don't have a map function on my phone. I don't know where I am.
You come pick me up.
Pick me up. I don't know where I am.
I'm so cold.
Freezing cold. I have no idea where I am. And people don't seem to speak English around here.
It's raining. I thought that didn't exist. Like, I didn't know weather was a thing.
His bipolarity is the distance between his testosterone injections is depending on which Rogan you get. The one who cares about immigration is far from his testosterone shots.
At the beginning of the month.
And the one who is very angry.
If it's gone 3 weeks, like starting to get weepy, and I really feel bad about the immigrants.
Whereas the day after he gets a shot, he's like, why don't they just start shooting?
I'll sign up myself.
Exactly. We got to do this.
So when he's a soy boy, he's got empathy.
Exactly.
I heard someone describe Rogan, I can't remember which comic it was, say that he's someone who's so open-minded, his brain is leaking out of his skull.
That sounds...
That was years ago.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, that's a real thing that I just read and now understand.
Skull. I think it's 100% yeah. skull.
Oh, and there's no brain left. It's all skull.
Like the ghost of a brain.
The testosterone actually it carries like the electrical charges. That's the only thing in there.
He's got T brain.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but for real, and the right is so obsessed with testosterone. They're all on replacement. RFK's on replacement.
They're all glowing. Totally.
Sam, like we were talking off show that if we could disrupt the testosterone replacement
chain, that's
we would
exactly
save
it.
This country.
Just slightly dilute the dosage.
Yeah.
Honestly, like that's the talk about what Antifa should be up to. That's where it's at.
I would
right
put
there.
A little bit of psilocybin just to replace it. Just a little bit.
Exactly, microdosing. Yeah, no, I'm going to do that. I feel like I'm, you know, like 12, 15 years out. I'm going to do it.
From
getting
replacement?
On the TRT, of course. I want to be able to do, I want to be able to do like 65 push-ups when I'm in my 70s.
In jeans?
Yeah. Who cares? Who cares what I'm wearing?
Yes, the only gender-affirming care they believe in.
I know you're not a doctor.
Wow. Not yet.
But does TRT, corrode the brain? Because I'm trying to figure out how somebody could say something like this in public. This is RFK explaining to Donald Trump his theory. Like how far out in front, there was a theory that autism may have been a function of pregnant women taking excessive amounts of Tylenol. Mm.
Once you pop, you can't stop when you're pregnant.
You get really,
you know, it's like pickles and Tylenol.
And
the cravings are insane.
The court case about 4 or 5 weeks, the court case had been combined into a multi-district litigation, went in front of a judge 4 or 5 weeks before RFK came out with his proclamation. And the judge threw it out and said, I'm sorry, like almost like a summary judgment, like the quality of this research is such that it is not credible. The people presenting this are not credible enough for this case to go forward.
You mean the citations were clearly AI? Because that's been in every single MAHA report.
This was a legal case where there was a research and just the judge who gets steeped in this stuff before they make this just said, it's not credible. We can't go forward with this case. 2 weeks later, RFK Jr. comes out with this proclamation. And now it has migrated from pregnant women taking excessive amounts of Tylenol during a pregnancy to, can you guess?
I do think it's still the woman's fault, whatever it is.
No, it's the moil. Go ahead.
Say, don't take Tylenol if you're pregnant. And when you're when the baby is born, don't give it Tylenol. You can avoid it at all. Just don't give it Tylenol.
Really,
what do you have to lose? You really don't have much to lose.
Yeah, there's many other confirmation studies. There's two studies that show children who are circumcised early have double the rate of autism.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
It's highly likely because they're given Tylenol. So, you know, none of this is dispositive, but all of it.
Okay,
is
wait a second. We need to break this down. What does being circumcised early mean?
In the womb.
Well, unlike adult convert Ta-Nehisi Coates guy, I can't remember CBS dude. What's that guy's name?
Oh, Tony Dupacal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did he get circumcised? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Early and late.
But I just don't know what early circumcision means. I mean, the doctor I had, I have one son. The delivering doctor asked if we wanted circumcised in that, after he was born. We said, we'll hold off because we did it in a religious ceremony. Even in the religious ceremony, we didn't give the child Tylenol. I don't know that they
do you do ice
this.
It?
There's
a, what's, I don't
there's
know
a numbing.
The
moil has a numbing thing on the
CBD,
and my it's kid did not like react like the idea that they're giving a just born infant Tylenol, I find very, very unlikely.
Well, what's the conclusion that you should get adult circumcised and then just take it like a man and not take anything for it?
If that is the incidence, and he's sort of making this up about the Tylenol being given, if that was the instance, you would see like wild gender differences in autism rates. Like, this is insane that he said that.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's completely, it feels like somebody said to him like moments before at a coffee shop or something. And he's like, I didn't know
you were going to call on me, teacher.
Exactly. Am I supposed to say something now? I got a new thing.
No, when you bundle the lies, you bundle this fake science. It's like, okay. But and there's another study maybe after they're born. Who knows?
I've taken my COVID theory and cross-referenced it with my Tylenol theory, and it's the Jews.
But Ashkenazi Jews specifically.
What is...
Look at Marco Rubio.
Yeah, because Burgum does the nod because he's so polite because he's North Dakotan, but Rubio just decides to disassociate.
He's been doing that this whole time.
But you know, there's a tremendous amount of proof or evidence. I would say as a non-doctor, but I've studied this a long time ago. You know, I met Bobby.
Oh yeah, no, he spent a long time studying this.
Studying circumcision.
Him and Epstein studying early circumcision together.
APAC Shakur says, is this RFK Jr.'s way of telling the world that he's not circumcised? Yes. I think it probably is.
It's natural and it's beautiful.
We're going to deliver for the intactivists.
I don't clean it very much. Oh, sorry. I mean, sorry. I could say more, but yeah. There is an anti-circumcision wing of the men's rights movement that I'm sure intersects with MAHA.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And this is part of that.
That Venn diagram is a solid.
Seems to be a little bit solid. Of micro-targeting, though, in terms of political coalition. Like that.
Well, it's only micro-targeting if you do it too early. If you wait, it becomes the target becomes bigger.
Hey, it's macro-targeting, asshole.
Oh, my God. Let's go back to Rubio staring in and just sort of like... And this is where it's all about the circumcision.
But it's also like before he even speaks, you know Rubio's like, oh, God, where is he going? He's going to add. And then it's like
don't interrupt.
Now we're thinking about baby dicks. Like all of a sudden, all of a sudden, that's where we are.
Ecologism. And it's highly likely because they're given Tylenol. So, you know, none of this is this positive, but all of it is
God.
We should be paying attention to. Yeah. But, you know, there's a tremendous amount of proof or evidence, I would say, as a non-doctor, but I've studied this a long time ago.
Proof,
I
mean, evidence.
Bobby in my office 20 years ago, we were talking about the same thing 20 years ago. And I was a real estate developer. It bothered me that it seemed to be getting worse, but it's so bad now when you hear these numbers. It's not even really sustainable. I don't know how people do it, but there is some very strong evidence on Tylenol. In fact, at one point, I guess the company gave a warning. They gave.
They still don't recommend it during pregnancy. That's the weird thing.
They're not recommending it, and that's the company itself. So. Just don't take it. Don't take it. If you're a woman, don't take it. And don't give it to the baby when the baby's born. And I think that's going to have an impact. But I'd also get the shots in smaller doses. And, there are a few
shots
things. We give a few things that just seem to be. And I think you'd get that number way back up. Think of it. You have 1 in 20,000. And now it's just, it's not even believable when you.
It's not believable.
Think the 20,000 drops to 12. 12 children. So that's induced by something that's given or taken, and it should be able to be stopped. And you're talking about the Pennsylvania Dutch. You were talking about the Amish, where they don't take any of this stuff, and they have virtually none. Right? They have no.
Yeah, they're talking about the time an Amish guy went on Theo. I'm not joking about this. An Amish guy went on Theo Von's podcast, and they said they don't have ADHD in the Amish community.
Shut up.
So we're not even talking about autism anymore. But okay.
The
is
entire,
that what it is?
The entire religion is autistic. I'm sorry. Like, that much attention to the weaving and the no electricity. You got to be an autist to start that.
Have barn raising down to a science?
Yeah. Come on.
He goes on, I don't think it's in this clip, but he goes on, Trump says that we give babies vaccines the size of glasses of water.
Don't give them anything. Just give them air. Pure air. Inject them with air.
It is the size of it. We should not be giving them that much vaccine.
And
this
the
is
hockey puck sized tiger.
Why do we give babies vaccines that are 50 times larger than we give adults?
Meanwhile, like
that
how
is
does
crazy,
it,
sir.
It doesn't make sense.
How big is the ivermectin pill? They're like, we just gotta let him choke down some horse dewormer. It's all my kid needs. No, it is truly terrifying. I think Trump is the most cucked by RFK Jr. by far. Has there been anyone who's gotten him to 180 on a policy on the one effing thing that he did well, which was Operation Warp Speed? I mean, what a.
But
cup.
That ship had already sailed.
Whatever, he signed his name to it and all that. I'm
no,
just
but
saying,
I'm saying like the turnaround, I would not credit Kennedy with.
Oh, sure.
I would say like that ship had sailed. He was already disavowing the warp speed early because of the anti-vax movement. And because
he was resentful of it, though. There was a little bit, I mean, it was good, but like,
but he was trying to split the difference, because by the time he leaves office, like, they just went full on with, like, it's not really even real. The plan, I mean, remember what it was like, the pandemic, then it was the vaccines. Like, it's just like a huge market of self-denial. There were guys on the street in New York with microphones. I feel like Dave Rubin maybe even was out like in the first couple days in New York going like, I don't see any refrigerator trailers. Like, they were.
Dave Rubin was going saying there's nobody at the hospital. It must be a lie.
Jesus.
Amazing.
Because, like, I just wanted to be a fascist. I didn't want to be a psycho.
No.
That's what Rubio's saying. Like, oh, man.
I don't. It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
It's like, hey, Bobby, turn off your massage chair before you talk. It's just vibrant. Hold on. Let me drop another quarter into this thing. My back is really tight.
That would make a lot of sense.
If he has like a vibrating belt on, and that's why his voice is sounded like.
He knows he sounds like he's dying. Like, he's well aware, and yet he still talks.
He's the leader of health in the country.
Picture of health. Regular tanning beds, shoes, what are the tobacco strips? By the way, tobacco is all in on MAHA and RFK Jr. because they avoid tobacco completely. They don't talk. The leading cause of chronic disease, or so obsessed with chronic disease, is tobacco in this country. They don't talk about it.
Don't they sell nicotine? Like, aren't they part of that new nicotine movement?
Zyn?
Yeah, there's Zyn. That's the word. That's what I was. Zyn.
Who owns Zyn? I don't know.
But RFK Jr. is constantly popping it.
But I've heard, I think Zyn is like pretty dense with nicotine, right? I've heard like getting off of Zyns are way harder than getting off of.
So
like,
by Philip Morris.
Oh, good.
Small company.
They know how to do it.
Dr. Chaos MD, I claim to be a doctor, and I will confidently say that yes, TRT will completely degrade your cognitive function and make you a raving lunatic. However, it does make you a delightful shade of red. Chris Burdick, I wonder what connection might exist between RFK Jr. now claiming that circumcisions cause autism and his earlier assertion that COVID was a bioweapon engineered to spare Ashkenazi Jews.
Yes, we're heading there eventually. Just got to build the case.
A couple more IMs. Onion breath. FYI, falling ice and honking is likely what got the woman rammed by ice and shot 5 times last Saturday in Chicago. I guess maybe you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you can get through that you'll get 12, 15 mil.
Between the 101 and the 5, actually a brawny. Dudes Who Love My Little Pony. Please look that up, Sam, and watch the Netflix documentary.
Yes, Bronies. That's right. Wow, I love that. I don't want to watch that documentary. I don't want to know.
So what's going to happen at your show on Monday?
What isn't going to happen? It's going to be crazy. Fucking Tylenol everywhere.
Circumcisions.
Live circumcisions. Adult circumcisions. Child circumcisions.
TRT for the first 15 through the door. Is that the way
you
want to do
that? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to be doing stand-up. Stand-up comedy. Matt and I co-headlining. And Daniel Mate and Arm Brown's going to do some live audio-ing. Yeah, exactly. We're going to legalize it. It's going to be super fun. Come out. I forgot my merch, which sucks. But that's okay.
There's links to the tickets in the show.
Hey, the link to the tickets in the thank you in the show notes.
Legalized comedy.
My God. Yeah, the Riyadh stuff. I didn't get the invite to Riyadh, so I'm here now.
Yeah.
Super pissed.
I guessed. But that Riyadh's
you don't
over,
think I could
it?
Have been asked?
Isn't it over?
It's over. But my favorite part about that whole kerfuffle is that you know someone asked to be on that lineup.
Of course.
You know, like as a comic, like we know there's someone who's like, hey, could I actually?
I saw Tim Dillon got disinvited. Yeah. Do you need a replacement?
Does anybody have Turkey on the Sheik's number?
All right, I'm going to read five IMs and we'll get out of here. Chucky B, Amish don't get diagnosed with ADHD or autism because they don't go anywhere near a hospital. MJS617, Sam, Swalwell seemed to be really hyping up whatever's in the Epstein files. He can't afford to oversell this, in my opinion. It would be a big miscalculation if it turns out to be less than truly scandalous, and he should know this by now. He's going to lose all credibility if he underdelivers yet again. I feel like there are certain politics that Democrats are subjected to and Republicans know, right? Like they had 50 hearings on Benghazi and never paid a price. In fact, it was very lucrative. That's where the whole Clinton emails thing came from. What do you think about the Katie Porter thing? Just quickly. Do you give a shit?
I don't give a shit. I actually don't. I just think it's funny that people are making it a thing. I don't know where her political career is going, really. I think the AIPAC and the Netanyahu meeting stuff, I soured a lot of the progressive movement on her anyway before this. If she were a pain in the ass as a boss but also had great politics, that'd be different. I mean, I'm sorry, but it is. But this is just like, it's palace intrigue on a campaign that I don't think had a lot of legs to begin with. But, you know,
She seemed like the presumptive, like, nominee.
Isn't Harris going to jump? I don't know.
I don't think Harris is.
No. If it's Porter v. Newsom, we all know where I'm standing on that, on something like that.
But does Newsom, is there
he's
no
terming out?
Yeah.
I guess he's terming out. Okay. I don't know. I'm just from California, whatever. I don't know.
Do
you care?
There are parts about her politics that I very, very much like. And I think the question was dumb. I think she mishandled it as a political matter, as an optics. But do I care that she may be an ass to work for? I wouldn't necessarily want to work for her under those circumstances.
No, it's not going to ruin
a lot of people.
I don't think the campaign is over. I don't think it's like, you know,
they're really trying to push it hard. Somebody is.
Yeah, someone is trying to tank her for sure, and it's probably a centrist.
Lydia Rose, Franny, will you have transgender for everybody at your show?
Oh, transgender for everybody.
Everybody trans.
More, yeah. You first 100 through the door. If we sell out, everyone is getting free transgender.
Joe Banks, please cover Hegseth's announcement that he's accepted the building of a Qatari Emory Air Force Base in Idaho. We heard that and we cannot figure out what that means.
No sure, kidding. Idaho will love it, though.
They don't actually mean like there's going to be Qatari Air Force.
Why not?
But, all right. I guess, I mean, turnaround's a fair play.
It is kind of funny to put a Qatari Air Force base in like the state known for white supremacy.
Yeah, dude, when Israel bombs it, the anti-Semitism is going to go insane.
Mortified Penguin, Fed here. Federal worker, little clarification.
Got
my
it.
Bank usually gets my paycheck through on Saturdays. As I understand it, we should still get paid for the work we actually did the last pay period, 9/22 to 10/3, with pay stopping on 10/1 shutdown date. So we should get some, but not all of our paycheck. All right, two more.
Back to California really quickly. Everyone should have gotten their ballot to vote on Proposition 50 to redistrict California. To out gerrymander Texas.
When does that vote?
November.
Oh, wow.
But it's out now. You can send it back on mail, via mail or Dropbox. So fill that out. Yes. And I think it's good. This is put to the people. So don't sleep on that. It's in your mail. Go check it right now.
Kentucky boy, Chuck Schumer Moneyball movie where he's trying to replace octogenarian big names with potential prospects he's found at nursing homes. And the final I am of the week. Saber Drake. He used the word dispositive, so he must be right about this stuff.
Dispositive.
Matt, Brian, Emma in absentia, Francesca, great job today. The rest of you, great job this week.
Thank you, everybody. Subscribe to youtube.com/Franifio. Come see me live. Come watch my deep dive videos. Sorry that I'm getting these plugs in so late.
It's all in the notes.
It's in the notes. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The months shifted into years, while I shifted in and out.